Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Alternate Reality Gaming. We interview Steve Peters from 42 Entertainment, and he explains a whole new geek phenomenon. For more information and links we talked about on the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Welcome to Geeks On.
It's another episode of jam-packed geeky action.
It's been so long again.
Well, you know, it's the holiday season. Just, you know, Thanksgiving and people going out of town. And I know everyone wants a new Geeks On. It's just hard to get them out right now. So
yeah, it's hard when we're on different coasts, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, welcome back, everybody.
It is awesome.
How was your geek week?
I got out another video game in the meantime.
Really?
Congratulations. Yes,
my first as a producer credit.
So. Oh, congratulations. Yes,
can we check out your credits?
I can't say what the game is online. I can say that it is a children's veterinary video game, and it's probably one of the very few that have been released recently, and it's not The Sims Pets. So
you can say everything about it.
I didn't say a title.
Okay, whatever.
I didn't say a title or a company.
Can we link to it?
No.
No.
I haven't been doing that many geeky things, but I have been playing more Gears of War.
No, you weren't. You were playing Pinata Game.
I played a little bit, but my partner left for vacation, so I
Wait,
went...
Wait, you're gay?
Yes. My Gears
of War. But only on Gears of War.
Oh. So I went and bought another game. I'm a little embarrassed. I'll talk about it a little bit later, but I've been playing a lot of Viva Pinata.
Mm. A lot of Viva Pinata?
Yes.
Who are you playing Gears of War with?
Lisa. Lisa and I are going... We're partners.
She's not a partner.
Who
She's
we need
hot.
To work on to come back for next episode when we discuss our Christmas wish lists.
Yes.
She seems to be the perfect person to contribute to this.
Of course, because she has every geek gadget in the world.
Cool.
Yes,
all right.
But
so,
most geeks' Christmas wish list is... Lisa. Yeah, pretty much.
Or Aaron's sister.
There's the two.
Any geek happenings with you two?
I've been playing Rise of the Kasai in my few moments when I haven't been working out.
Okay.
And other than that, no.
No, my life's been boring.
Yeah, you know, holidays.
Holidays.
It's lots of holidays.
Oh,
stuff.
We played Guitar Hero 2.
We did play Guitar Hero. How could I forget?
Matt finished Guitar Hero 2 on
Medium.
You
completed it already?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
On that day.
I completed it on the day.
Oh, it was on the day you finished that? Oh, that explains why I was able to get it to put it down and eat another slice of pie.
Yes. Exactly.
Matt played all day on Thanksgiving Day, yes. Guitar Hero 2.
I was just, like, completely focused on the game. And
Gee, that doesn't sound like Matt.
Hello, pot. This is Kettle. You're black.
All right, so let's move on then to geek news. Let's get the... We have a big interview coming up that's long and...
Awesome.
Juicy and awesome.
Interesting interview.
I prefer to be called Ebony.
So, geek news.
Hit it, Chewie.
I'm so confused.
All right, who's going to do geek news first?
Don's dropping stuff.
I'm destroying the studio.
Geek news.
Don knocked down a multi-million dollar piece of equipment.
So, Universal Music Group Chief Executive Doug Morris said on Tuesday that he may try to fashion an iPod royalty fee with Apple computers so that whenever you buy an iPod, some of that money from buying the iPod goes to Universal.
And he did this with the Zune.
This is what he did with the Zune.
I don't think Apple's going to do it.
I hope they don't.
Apple, yeah. I mean, Apple's already got a community, iPod, I mean, the MP3 player, what...
Yeah, the premier MP3 player.
I mean, if they pull their music from iTunes, or if they prevent it, then they're going to be the odd man out.
I think you're right.
So
I hope it doesn't happen.
The idea behind this is he says that MP3 players inherently are devices to steal their music. And so every MP3 device, they want a chunk of the money to pay for the stolen music that you have on it.
That's like NBC.
Hey, F you, Universal.
It's like NBC saying that they should get money from every VCR sold.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I think it's fine as long as they do the same thing to Microsoft and every computer that's made. No, computers.
Why is it fine to assume that we're all thieves?
Clearly, computers' only purpose in life is to steal music.
So why is that fine to you, Peter?
No, he just thinks it should be across the board.
I don't think that's
every
fine
single
to be
Universal.
The board.
Every single Universal movie is made to steal some of my money.
You know what?
Therefore, every time they should put out a film, I should get some money from them.
Peter, the Zunecade, a piece of the money. Well, of course, no one's paying for it. But when you buy a Zune, some of your money is going to Universal Music.
That's BS.
I think there should be a birth tax on anyone that's born.
They're
going to steal.
Should go to Universal.
It's Universal's music, so, you know,
Apple,
just saying.
Do not fall to this BS. Make them get on there, put their music on your website. You're the one that's holding all the cards here. If they don't want to play.
Fight the machine, man.
Yeah, come on. If they don't want to...
Apple's kind of a machine, too.
I was going to say that.
Machine on machine action!
Yeah!
That's hot.
If Universal...
It's M-O-M.
If Universal doesn't want to play... To enter into this new era of buying music online legally at a reasonable price, then they will crumble, period. That's all I have to say.
Did you guys hear about...
Was that a rant? Yes.
Did you guys hear about the Zune's big... sort of sale feature is the fact that you can share your music with your friends, right?
Yeah.
Three times.
That's the thing. Yeah. You can transmit the music over to someone and they can play it three times.
Here's the problem with
Zune. It's like a genie wish. You know?
The problem with the Zune is that the software on there theft software that they've installed on here is so restrictive that, let's say you make your own music, okay, mm-hmm. and you have the song, you put it on the Zune, and you share it with a friend. It puts a security key on that, and they can only play that one three times without your permission.
Lame.
So they're encoding and putting that software on every single song, whether you wrote the song or not.
Couldn't that be considered a virus?
No.
But it's going for every person
lock.
That okay
it's a lock
but you know actually it would be ingenious if somehow there was some hack that came out in the future
that it's already happening.
The future is here.
Yeah, but if a hack came out that suddenly stopped that from happening, then the Zune might become very popular.
Zune will
something
not
called
even...
Skeleton Key perhaps
there's
the
a
thing.
There's a Zune,
not that I've heard of such a program.
But
Skeleton
Key if it was out there, it would be called Skeleton Key, maybe, if it did exist.
You might be able to find it if it exists. Never mind.
Yeah.
Moving on.
The Zune will not even play the music. You know, Microsoft has a music store that's out right now.
Right.
Oh, I heard about that.
It won't even play its own music.
Yeah.
It's that restrictive. The music that you bought on their original site that's encoded a certain way.
You have to rebuy the music.
You have to rebuy it because the rights...
Bite me. Yeah. Bite me a lot.
The Zune is the biggest joke and failure on the planet. Not because it's not a decent MP3 player. It's because it's the rights protection on it is so absurd that only an idiot would buy it.
Yeah.
I apologize to listeners out there who already have the Zune.
And happen to be idiots.
Who were given to them by their mom.
We're sorry you're idiots. Yes.
All right.
So the next one is, and I know you'll be excited, there's a game called Dawn.
Ooh. Dawn.
Dawn.
Ooh.
All right. So now, what's
video game, board game, role playing?
Video game. Now, here's. Okay. I'm going to try and massacre this language at the beginning of this. Dawn ki talash gira mulkan ki polis kar rahein lekein e bat samijlo. Dawn. I don't know why I'm doing this as an old Jewish guy. Dawn ko pakdana mushkil nahin nam. Never mind. It's the legendary dialogue from the blockbuster thriller Dawn. A master at playing cat-and-mouse games with cops, Don, the suave and deadly big boss of international mafia, is on the run once again.
Who got my diary?
Can you succeed in hunting him down where even the Interpol, with all its alacrity, has failed? This is kind of like...
So you're trying to catch a mob boss.
It's kind of like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, but cooler. Basically, what's cool about this...
Cool.
Is Hungama Mobile and Excel Entertainment, the producers of Dawn, are proud to launch to mobile games on the popular movie and the first ever multiplayer online game for any Bollywood movie. That's what's weird about this.
This is based off of a Bollywood
movie. Bollywood movie, and it's specifically in India for a multiplayer game in India. The mobile game's available in two versions. Mm-hmm. One's a race and chase game on the streets of Kuala Lumpur, and the other one's an online role-playing game. And basically, I didn't realize that India was the fourth largest mobile and internet market in the world, and they're huge, and they're really, really into MMORPGs.
A lot of these countries, especially ones that don't want to run wire to houses, the mobile market has,
it's unreal. And you can download
China.
Boom.
It's got these, everyone's using mobile phones because they don't want to run a cable phone line out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So,
where in the world is Dawn?
It's not as good.
No. Yeah. I'll work on it.
Okay.
You have to do it in kind of a Indian style, though.
Yeah. Where in the world is Dawn?
And then we dance. Bing bong. Perhaps not the best bit on a radio show.
No, not so much.
Yeah. Okay.
But I like the shimmy.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
I shimmy well.
Dawn.
Yes. Oh, you want news?
Yes.
Okay, well. Last year at E3, Peter and I, as one of our best in show picks, picked out
The Rule of Rose.
The Rule of Rose.
What? Less a lasting
impression. Wow. Wow, yeah,
Don. There's a lot of words on this page.
What's the game?
Reading
Rule of
hard.
Rose. Okay.
Rule of Rose. Rule of Rose.
Okay. Which was pretty cool. It was about a young girl. What was she? She's in a boarding school.
Boarding school, and it's like haunted, maybe, or there's a slasher loose.
And R-O-W-S? It looks like...
Oh, that was downstairs in... Had a haunted house type of thing? Okay.
And it looks like the other girls your age are kind of going crazy and killing people is what it looked like to me.
My high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it looked neat. It had a great visual design to it. It looked like a lot of fun.
But it was an indie company.
It was an indie UK company.
Okay.
505 Games.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Rule of Rose may not be making it to the United States.
Really?
Mm. 505 Games will no longer publish controversial horror title Rule of Rose in the UK. The game was due to go on release today, but has faced a storm of criticism regarding its content, with even the mayor of Rome, Walter Veltroni, and European Justice and Security Commissioner Franco Frattini blasting the game's obscene cruelty and brutality. But here's the weird thing. The game itself had already been approved for sale by PEGI and the International Software and Video Standards Council, which are basically their ESRB.
Right? Yeah, I would sue, because if you spent that much money in development and then after asking if they could do it and then they say you can't release it. That's,
so this is, to my knowledge,
say it, Aaron.
To my knowledge, this is probably one of the first examples of a politician actually blocking sale of a video game
in England.
Italy.
Oh, in Italy.
Yeah,
because that happens in England.
But 505 Games is no longer publishing it. So
at all in Europe?
Well, it just says 505 Games will no longer publish controversial horror title Rule of Rose in the UK.
Lame.
So there seems to be a ripple effect going on. And let's face it, if it was too... Well, actually, no, because they're banning it for violence.
Yeah.
Right.
So violence is more likely to make it in the United States. So we may actually see it.
Oh, we'll see it.
Especially if they're desperate to recoup
some of their
losses on this. So
they ban all sorts of stuff. They had to cut a big scene out of the last James Bond movie.
Yeah. So I say, personally...
Really?
I say if you're a big anti... I can't speak English today. What's that thing where they tell you can't say something? Anti-censorship. If you're a big anti-censorship person,
Dawn
go out and
working.
Support this game.
It looks like
a good game.
Yeah.
It looks like a good game. And
it looked great.
I find it personally offensive that somebody says, I can't play something because they find it ooky.
I agree.
Just speaking of something you just mentioned, they cut something out of the Bond movie. Do you know what they cut?
Yeah, the torture scene.
Really? In England?
Yeah. I don't know if they cut the entire scene out, but they had to cut a majority of that scene.
Really?
Really? That was really not that bad.
Well, keep in mind, different standards. We are really bad on sex, but great on violence. They're great on sex and bad on violence.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but they didn't really show anything.
By our standards. I think a lot of people... I was kind of shocked by it. But
it's a shocking scene, but it's not, All right. Well, moving on.
The guy wanted to show his pecs. He'd done
by the way,
8 months of work.
Little video game news tagged onto your guys' video game news. You know the release of the Left Behind game is coming out now.
I saw that guy give an interview on National Geographic Channel. He's scary.
Yeah, well, a lot
National
of...
Okay, I want to see that. On YouTube?
Yeah, no. I was watching National Geographic, and it was all about the Second Coming and everything like that. that, and he was in there giving interview.
There's a whole bunch of thank God. There's a whole bunch of religious organizations who are out and saying that everyone should ban this game. It's an absurd game. I mean, if you want to play a dumbass game, go play the dumbass game. But he has even responded to it, and he essentially lies on his response. You can go to his website, and he has this response where he said, "There's no violence in here. There's no point where you actually pull the trigger and shoot somebody.
You just have other people do it."
Yeah, you just grab, like a real-time strategy game, you just grab a whole bunch of people and tell them to do it. I mean, not only that... You're defending yourself from these evil people, like gay people.
Because they want to be Hindu at you?
Yes.
I mean, it's absurd. The guys, anyway.
They have accents.
It's out there.
Oh, yeah. One of the quotes that I remember him
saying.
The
sad part is I'll probably buy the game. Because I'm really curious.
Give him money.
It's a real-time strategy game. You go around and click on gay people and Buddhists. I mean, what else is there?
I have research to do.
I love clicking on Buddhists.
Instead of buying it, why don't you email them and say that we're a geeky podcast and we've talked about this controversial game and you want a free copy so that you can review it?
Okay, everyone listening to the show, write them and tell them that you are parents considering buying this game for your children, but you will only buy it if you can get the review and consent of geeksOn.com. Because we are notoriously...
Don's practicing what we just learned. What we will actually talk about in the future.
We get the point.
All right. Go get the game. Don't pay for it. I went to Gen Con SoCal.
Ooh.
I went there and I didn't... I'm not a big Gen Con SoCal fan anymore.
I've met three people who went. Mm-hmm. Two gave very, very tepid reviews. And two gave glowing reviews.
If you are someone who likes to go and game in a tournament setting where you sign up on a big call sheet, you find the game that you're going to be good at, and you go through and you win, lose, and you work your way up the ladder, I think this is the game for you. The
Magic the Gathering type games or RPGs?
They've got all sorts of stuff. They've got all of that.
Yeah.
All that.
How do you lose at an RPG?
I think that's a little less of a thing, but, you know, like...
They're different.
But like
board games. Okay.
But board games.
Yeah. Some it's like an elimination type thing, last character standing.
Right.
Some it's role-playing awards, you know.
Yeah. Huh. And it's really bent toward that. I mean, it's very cold, big giant room with giant tables. You don't see signs about where to, you know, sign up. I didn't play one game. I just went in there, looked around. I didn't take any pictures because I didn't bring my stupid battery to my camera, so I was kind of didn't have anything to do.
And that's their fault, I'm
telling
you.
Aaron was having a bad day.
But I did go. They had some people there selling games, but very few. Mm-hmm. I mean, Strategicon, which is here, had a way bigger room when we went of things you could buy. But I did buy some games.
Cool. Which games?
I went to this. Actually, I only bought from one guy. John Wick, who is a role-playing designer.
That's two names? Not like one name, John Wick.
John Wick is one guy. He's partnered with another man and has a company. And he was selling with another independent game company. They had a booth there, and they were selling these games. So I bought three role-playing games.
Oh, you got Cat.
I got... Yeah, and look how small they are. I mean, like, my favorite one that I cannot wait to play is only 13 pages long. And this is the best idea.
What is that title there?
It's called Wilderness of Mirrors. So let me talk about each one real quickly. These are all independent games. Unfortunately, the best one that I think is most intriguing.
And these are all by the same company?
This is all by the same guy, John Wick.
John Wick.
And I'll put a link to the website.
Great.
Actually, I'm going to add, I talked to him. He wants to come on the show.
Cool.
So
I bought Cat, and I have a campaign prepared.
And you're ready to play?
We're not quite ready because I'm still waiting for the goddamn rule book to show up.
Well, if you want to borrow this one to get a jump on it. So let me start with Wilderness of Mirrors. This is the one that's the most intriguing to me. This is a spy game.
Okay.
A la James Bond. And I don't want to talk about too much because it's just... if I talk about too much, it's the entire game. It's only 13 pages. But the idea that he has behind it is that he doesn't like the idea of, in most role-playing games, you create a character, and every time you do something, you roll a dice, and conflict is generated by the failure of the roll.
Okay.
You didn't open the lock. You missed the guy. You get shot, or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch James Bond movies, or, you know, it's the Bourne Supremacy, or you read... They don't. They open the lock every freaking time.
Right.
They shoot the guy. When he goes skiing, he can jump off the ramp and land on. He does it every time. And most role-playing games, you can't create a character that way, a balanced character. I mean, how do you create a D20 character that has a perfect stat in every skill?
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's stupid. Why even create a character? So he has a character creation system in there in which everybody who plays the game can do everything. Hmm. But every person is really good, an expert in one aspect, like technology or the assassin or the team leader. Mm-hmm. And they have the ability to kind of excel in that aspect. But if you need, if you're not the, you know, if you're not the safe cracker and you need to do it, you can still do it. But it's going to, you have these kind of action dice. It's going to use up more action dice. But the great thing about it is the action dice don't tell you whether you fail or not. It tells you who controls the narrative of the story.
No.
If you roll too low, the game master, the operations man, narrates. You know, the safe, you know, jumbles up and you open it, but you make, you know, so much noise the guards, you know, come. If you're pretty low but you weren't too low, the narrator, the game master narrates what happens, but you get to put in a but or an and. You miss, you jump across the pit and you miss. But I catch a vine,
right,
and I'm hanging on it. If you make it, then just barely, then you get to narrate it. You jump across the canyon, but the narrator gets to do a but or an and.
Huh.
And if you make it by a long shot, you get to tell the whole story about what happens. You shoot the guy, you know, from across the way, you know, across the street with your...
That's fun.
It's a great freaking idea.
We should give it a shot.
The other great aspect of this game is that you don't. The game master doesn't have to prepare for the game. The game starts by the game master giving the character, the players, a goal. You need to go and infiltrate this terrorist organization and steal the plans to save the world. Then the players sit down and they tell the game master how they're going to do this, what the big plan is.
Don and loves this game.
They design it. So, and you do it, if you do it right, it sounds like you could do it in character. So the operations guy says, okay, they have a camp and they draw it out. There's 30 men over here. There's, you know, two of these guys have guns, blah, blah, blah. There's a password on the in the side gate. And the password guy says, okay, there's one way to get the password. You have to go visit this woman who's at the bar. Blah. And so they plot out the whole
plan. This game is obviously for the inventive.
Exactly. And the great thing about all these games,
you actually sounded kind of disparaging when you said that.
Well, I just were, you know.
It's like, I'm worried that we
can't. Well, I think it's a great game. I just, you know, wondered the guys who just want to sort of.
None of these games.
Be told a story.
Yeah.
Most of these games are, I think, written for people who have a little bit of experience in role playing.
Right.
In fact, they're written as if you know what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good. No, what is a role-playing game?
And I cannot wait to get... I hope he comes on the show, because really, all these games, Cat and this other one called Discordia...
Cat's a genius one.
Cat's another great one. They all explore the idea of who really is telling the story. For example, in Cat, which is a story about everyone playing cats, mm-hmm. and the cats protect humans... And that is their job.
Which is why they stay still and stare at a wall or run around the house like crazy.
There's these crazy creatures that latch onto humans and destroy their lives by sucking out their dreams or life ambitions and sometimes even kill humans. And only cats can see them. So they have to protect the humans. And we all play cats. But again, there's not this... It's the failure rate is the way you roll the dice isn't, well, you just failed it, blah, blah, blah. It's a mm-hmm. storytelling element.
Wow.
But he also suggests ideas like when a player walks into a room, ask him what he sees. You know, like you walk into a room, what do you see? And the player then says, well, I see, I'm in my master's room. You hear the dog, the neighbor's dog. What's the dog's name? Your neighbor's dog's name? The player makes it up. And I think these are great ideas. So anyway, we're going to try to get him on.
Excellent.
What was the third one?
The third one's called Discordia. Mm-hmm. I had to pick this up because...
Well, because everything by Robert Anton Wilson.
Eris.
It's a whole role-playing game about in the world of the Principia Discordia. In fact, the whole book looks like the, you know, Principia Discordia.
Nice.
And you have trust points. And the great thing about here is you roll the dice and you get success points by trying to find fives. You roll fives. 2 plus 3 is 5. anyway.
That's so those three games are Cat, Discordia, and
Wilderness of Mirrors. He's got plenty of other ones. Cool. And these are only like...
And a neat design, too. Not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got... There's a nifty little website where you can go to buy all of these, too. We'll put a link up to that.
All right.
Piotr? Okay. So, Thomas Chesney, a lecturer in information systems at Nottingham University Business School, did a study where he took 55 graduate students and research assistants, and they had them examine one Wikipedia article apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was, randomly, they were either assigned an article that they were an expert in,
mm-hmm.
or an article that they weren't experts in.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to find out basically how they would rate it. Well, two things that they found. First of all, they found that experts who were rating Wikipedia articles found generally that the articles were generally credible.
Hmm.
Okay.
Good to hear.
People who were not experts didn't think so much of them. So people who were not experts in the field tended to
distrust
something. Yeah. Whereas experts who knew what they were looking for tended to find, well, wow, these are actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The other side about it is he found that, there were still problems. He said, 13% of the experts reported finding mistakes in the assigned articles. But the question is this more than what you would find in, say, the Encyclopedia Britannica? Right. Because there is a study that Nature did last year where they found that the two were very similar in terms of accuracy.
So, really?
Yeah.
I use Wikipedia all the damn time.
I do, too. And I get harassed about it all the time. People go, oh, you found that out in Wikipedia? What are you thinking?
I don't understand why that's a bad thing.
Because they say it's not a trustworthy site. Because in the whole concept,
me telling you the definition.
I know, but it's a dependent thing. I mean, obviously, you don't use it for I need to design a rocket to get to the moon. Let's look it up on Wikipedia. Right. But for general information, I think.
No, but if you're in a big good argument with somebody and you throw out something and they say, "Where'd you read that? Wikipedia?" Are you going to go? Are you going to allow that to be a source of information, or are you going to laugh at them?
I guess I'm kind of credible. I have no question about that. I'd accept that.
Okay. I read it on Wikipedia.
Well, I mean, the thing about it, I mean, having changed some things on Wikipedia, I mean, you can go up there. You could very easily put things that are not correct up on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. Like the Indian elephants are making a resurgence.
Right.
You could say whatever you want, but the thing is,
Stephen Colbert tried to do that.
Right. But people do, people do check things when they've been changed,
mm-hmm.
and so you do. There is some oversight, and it tends to be pretty accurate.
Genius thing about that is being able to see the past history, a lot of it. I mean, you can see pretty far back who made the change,
yep.
and what they changed. I mean, it's awesome, and be able to restore it at any time. I mean,
yep. mm-hmm.
that is the most. That's probably the most brilliant part of the tool set. And now they just need a better WYSIWYG editor. Like, trying to get that shit to work sometimes.
I just want you to say WYSIWYG again.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I actually find it to be fairly...
Like, to put something in bold or to tab and all that, you kind of have to know code.
Right.
Yeah, and you just... But it's minor code.
There shouldn't be any code. It's like 2006. Put a WYSIWYG thing on there, make it look like Word, and like, come on, make it a flash site.
Okay.
Yeah, true.
Because what you have to do right now is what? Bullshit!
That's some serious bullshit. Okay, Matt.
With their vast intergalactic knowledge and ability to harness the Force, the task of convincing UN officials to recognize their cause should be a walkover for a pair of Jedi Knights. But self-proclaimed Jedis Yumada and Yunyun, better known as John Wilkinson and Charlotte Law, have adopted a more conventional approach in their pursuit of recognition, delivering a protest letter.
So this is in the United States now?
No, this is in the UK. Okay. Basically in the
this
UK.
This keeps coming up over there.
Yes.
I don't know what it
is. Now, what has happened now is that the Jedi religion in the UK has now become the fourth largest religion
in the UK. And they want recognition.
Wow.
It now has 390,000 followers.
Now, these are people who actually have...
Actually go to service. They apply. They put on their documents. Well, here's one of the things. The UN International Day of Tolerance, which takes place annually on November 16th, is aimed at emphasizing the dangers of intolerance and promoting integration and cohesion across the globe. Yamada,
the universe.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Yamada and Yunyun, both from London, want the day to be renamed Interstellar Day of Tolerance to reflect millions of people across the globe who have chosen to follow the Jedi Code as religion and truly reflect social diversity.
You know what? I think that's a really great idea. And no, here's the reason why. So we keep trying to work on the intolerance of the day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why can't we work toward the intolerance of the future and say, you know what? We need to set this mindset now,
yep,
for it universal. And I think it's a good – actually, I think that's a great freaking idea. A, it's just to set it out there to say, you know what? We're not gonna tolerate gay people or a black person or whatever.
What grays.
Grays. Yeah, exactly, grays.
We're going to avoid an intolerance of grays now.
This is a
mindset. Before it's a problem.
This is a mindset that's bigger than that. And guess what? When aliens do arrive – wouldn't it be cool to have aliens show up and go, you know what? This is the first planet where before they knew that there were people beyond their planet, they actually had a day to say that we accept these type of people. I think it's the grays.
It's important because when we finally have, you know, interaction with such alien species as the... Ka-chunga, maka, maka, poo, poo! Mm-hmm. You know, we won't have...
Peter
problems
knows them.
With them. I mean,
I actually speak.
Yes,
I am fluent in that.
Yes, I mean it's like it's good because we can open our hearts already to the right now.
And you're making fun of me, aren't you? I think people write Peter. Peter, everyone write Peter and tell him that he should be embracing a
culture. Yes, embrace one right now.
I'm
just curious.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just curious if the Jedi's already outnumber the Scientologists.
Oh, please.
Oh, no way.
There's
no way. But however,
how many Scientologists do you think there are?
Millions.
Are you kidding me? If there's a couple guys who dress up in Jedi robes and sit and watch episode 3.
They bought Hearst's mansion.
They're rich. No one's questioning that.
Well, they didn't do it with 13 rich people.
Yeah, but you got to keep in mind that they have a built-in money-making scheme in...
They're the biggest owner of land in Hollywood.
Yes, but the difference being that when you are in the Scientology religion, mm-hmm, you attend classes that you pay for. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm getting this exactly right. Someone out there will be able to, you know.
Well, you didn't do that with 1,300 Jedi Knights.
Yeah.
No, sitting around eating fiddle faddle on their couch.
I'm not saying that you can't.
I'm also
going to
go out
of
limb and say that not necessarily like – there are a lot of extremely wealthy Scientologists.
Right.
What are you saying about Jedi Knights?
Extremely wealthy. There's no active recruitment plan of the wealthy that the Jedi Knights are enacting.
Yeah.
No, look, all I'm saying
we
is
we have
that
control of the Senate.
All I'm saying
is
not
the checkbook
Scientology
you're looking for.
Scientology is a very well-organized religion that has a strong...
Jedi Council?
I want to see our world's actual Jedi Knights.
I just have to say one thing. That's me getting shot down.
If the Queen knights one of the Jedis, we will actually have one of our first Jedi Knights.
Oh, wow.
All right. Can we move on?
They're
going to
be like
commanders. More news?
Okay. I got one last thing.
All right.
One teeny tiny little thing. So when the PlayStation 3 came out, it was one of the biggest days of violence in front of stores.
According to Dig.
Yeah, well, probably.
Three bloggers.
But you'd believe it if it showed up in Wikipedia.
Right. I hear they caught one of those guys, just the guy who shotgunned that other guy.
Here's a few of them. Hartford, Connecticut, two armed thugs tried to rob a line of people waiting for the new PlayStation 3 game system to go on sale early Friday and shot one man who refused to give up his money.
They caught one of those guys. He refused because he had $2,500 in his pocket. Mm-hmm. He refused. Got shot. They dragged him into the store. And he's been quoted as saying, I wasn't thinking about being shot. I just was thinking about PlayStation 3. I asked the store manager to give my money to my friends who are still waiting in line. Why is his friend still waiting in line?
Yeah.
Not much of a friend. His ass got shot.
Don't lose your place.
What's that?
So he survived.
He survived. And they gave him a free PlayStation 3.
See? And he'd probably think that was worth it.
He probably sold on eBay.
Sullivan, Indiana. Man was in critical condition after emergency surgery for a stab wound after he and a friend tried to rob two men of consoles they were waited 36 hours in line to buy. Mm-hmm. Nationwide, short supplies of the PS3 and strong demand led to long lines of buyers, some waiting for days outside stores. Two people were arrested in Fresno, California after a crowd trampled people in the parking lot.
One of those was really dumb. The store owner thought it would be a great idea to have everyone stand in a beyond this line in a mob and set up chairs, like musical chairs, and blow a horn. And whoever got a chair got – so there was a melee of people, and one guy went head-on into a post and broke his jaw.
Oh, my God.
What store manager is so freaking dumb to think of a combat situation?
I've met a few managers at Fry's that didn't impress me all that much.
One with the samurai swords. I thought that was good.
Yeah. So
one man leave with PlayStation 3.
Yeah, there are a bunch. There are a few more that just cracked me up. One was 30 miles away from the initial Connecticut shooting. Another shopper was beaten and robbed of his new PlayStation 3.
When I bought my PlayStation 2 down kind of near Marina Del Rey, that there was a guard. It was at midnight. There was a guard who walked us all personally to our cars. Armed guard.
Two men wearing black ski masks and sunglasses made off with five consoles after holding two employees at gunpoint in Inglewood, Ohio. A Pennsylvania teenager was also robbed of his new PlayStation. Lexington, Kentucky, somebody fired BB pellets from a passing vehicle at people waiting outside a Best Buy store. And police fired a talcum powder ball at the ground outside a Target store in Henrico, Virginia, to get the attention of an unruly crowd of about 350 people
who were waiting to buy. A little freshening up, a little talcum powder ball. They've been in line for
Great idea. I've been to a few conventions.
We should go to a few conventions and do that.
Talcum. Did you guys ever see the footage on the internet of when the Xbox 360 came out, where these guys took their 360, they took it out of the box?
Oh, they did that
in the parking
time.
Lot.
Did they do it with the PS3?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah. But yeah. What is it called? Destroy My PlayStation 3. They were first in line, bought the PlayStation 3, took it outside, and smashed it with a sledgehammer.
No. This isn't what they did. They took it out. They took the Xbox 360 out of the box. Mm-hmm. They put it into their car, and then they put the box on top and pretended like they'd forgotten about it.
Oh.
And then if they would pull around the corner, it would fall to the ground, and people would be going, oh, my God. And they'd go and try and catch it, and they'd grab it. They'd pick it up, and they'd be like – and they'd realize they'd been screwed with.
I saw a website where somebody had taken a PS3 and gutted it and turned it into a grill.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I think they're the guy's making that.
Oh genius.
Alrighty.
My last thing is a mini movie review for Happy Feet. All right. So has anyone else here seen Happy Feet?
No.
Not yet.
Okay. If you have ever believed that you are in a society that doesn't necessarily value your skills or your talents or your interests, or if you've ever felt excluded in any way, shape, or form, Happy Feet is
like
the one for you.
Like intolerance?
Take intolerance in some way or another.
There should be a day.
Or geek oppression.
An interstellar day.
There should be an interstellar intolerance day. Yeah. Where you are intolerant to all your neighbors.
So you like the movie?
I liked the movie. It's it gets insipid here and there.
Even
kids
though
it was
a gigantic gay analogy?
It is the biggest gay analogy that I've ever seen. I wasn't really going to go into that, but
that's what I heard.
For our gay geeks, go see this movie and you will be stunned. It's the first animated gay coming out story. However, if you are not gay, you'll miss it entirely. Don't worry about it. Bring the kids. You know,
it's Happy Feet. There's a great Ethel Merman scene.
I went and saw The Fountain.
Oh, you did?
And you guys should go see it. I really liked it.
Really?
I really liked it.
I'm going to hate
it. Like a convoluted mess to me.
It is a visual poem.
Okay.
So if you want
story,
Star Wars Episode 3 plot lines where it's all laid out for you. Well, actually, that wasn't really laid
Star
out
Wars
for you
Episode 3? Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't ever want Star Wars.
Yeah, let's
but
compare
episode
it to
4,
Star
5,
Wars.
And 6, maybe.
This is beautiful, interesting, and my wife and I talked about it for about an hour afterwards, trying to figure out, you know, at the end of it is not, it is up for interpretation.
Oh, God.
And I think that it leads to great conversation.
Okay. Well, you guys deconstruct films for fun. So, great. I mean, you must have loved
Real science fiction and has a spiritual overtones of it. Design of it is just freaking awesome.
Okay.
So you guys go see it because I'd love to talk about it, have an episode of Geeks On about it because it's worth talking about.
Well, why don't we move on to our interview?
So we have a very special guest with us tonight, Steve Peters from 42 Entertainment. Welcome, Steve.
How's it going?
We do have two guests.
We do have two guests. And his son, Elliot, who is a listener of ours.
An avid listener.
Right. In fact, I think we read your email on the... Didn't we?
Yeah. It just goes to show you, if we read your email, eventually you'll end up in a chair.
It's just a matter of
open the door. And
So Elliot once listened to like every episode of ours in a row for godforsaken reason.
32 hours straight, I believe he said.
32 Explaining hours his still straight. Slightly dazed and confused expression.
Exactly. Right. But you contacted us and said your dad was in the geeky arts. And so here you are with your dad.
Is that actually like now a major at college, Aaron? Like the geeky arts?
It should be.
Actually, it is.
You can get your GFA.
There are two colleges in Germany dedicated to the geeky arts.
All right.
There is?
Mm-hmm. What falls
I don't have the info on me.
All right. So anyway.
I want some evidence.
Steve is here with his son, Elliot. And you're going to explain to us alternate reality gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Or ARGs. And the company you're involved with that produces some ARGs.
Mm-hmm. See, it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Okay, so first question, who are you, Steve Peters?
Who am I, Steve Peters?
Yeah, give us a little bit of your background and how you came to the company 42 Entertainment.
Well, I'm currently at 42. I'm in a game / experience designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You could pick up women with that line.
Well, you would think. I've been there with them for about a year and a half.
Okay.
And, but was involved heavily in this new genre of alternate reality gaming for probably, about 5 years. Since it's been in existence.
New art form.
New art form. It's kind of in the fledgling stage, kind of like film was back at the beginning of the 1900s. And
right.
So mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun time to be doing it. Before that, I owned a production company, Vital Interactive Media, and we did lots of just audio production. I was a composer, did some game music for some big, big hit games that I'm sure... You've never heard of.
Were you a geek beforehand, or are you now a geek by proxy?
I've always been a geek. I think I was born probably 10 or 15 years too
Excellent.
Early.
Excellent, and he spread it onto his progeny?
Yeah, so I spread it onto my...
Well, there's been geeks throughout time.
Well, yes.
So,
yeah. But imagine being a D&D geek in the 1800s. That would suck.
Yeah. You'd be hanging from a rope for sure.
Yeah.
But my
Roll
dad's
your
big,
millet.
My dad's a big geek.
Save versus blue law.
My dad collected stamps, built models, and astronomy. So that's a geek in another... You know what I mean?
I've met your dad.
Okay, I did models and took photos of models to try and make them look real. And, the whole and was in the computer gaming since pretty much the beginning of, the little Coleco Mattel football games.
Uh-huh.
And then back with my Atari ST computer. Well, first before that, of course, the Commodore 64.
Kick ass.
Timex Sinclair, all
Archon.
The way back then. Yeah.
Archon.
So as long as there have been computer games, I've been... Yeah, grabbing up as many as I could and making my wife very happy at how much money I've been spending on stuff. So
excellent.
And but now it's all paying off, because I make a living doing that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's the fun part.
So a year and a half ago, you started working at. Is that when the company was created? 42 Entertainment.
Was created just before they produced I Love Bees.
Okay.
I Love Bees was kind of their first public game or public. thing that they did. That was an alternate reality game for Halo 2.
So release. AI wasn't before?
AI was the very first one, but they did that while they were at Microsoft. So
it doesn't count. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Same group of people, but not a solid company.
Right, so that was really the first one, was the and it didn't even have a name back then. It was kind of this weird internet thing they did for AI.
And Jordan Weissman was the one who started it all?
Jordan Weissman was one of the founders of 4EA. Yeah, okay. And he and Alan Lee.
Is he still with it? Okay.
Yeah, Jordan's
he's
still
the
there.
Faza guy?
He's the guy who created Faza before that and actually created Shadowrun.
The board game Faza? Like Star Trek role-playing
game? From what I saw, it was Star Trek role-playing game. It was Shadowrun. Those were the two names that leapt out at me immediately, and I had a little geek tremble and then went on.
Yeah, these guys are geniuses at what they do. So they kind of got together with and Spielberg wanted to do something very interesting for AI as far as a new form of storytelling to help promote the movie. And so he was in a position to say, yeah, I'm willing to take a chance on this kind of stuff. And it was this like dark ops project at Microsoft, like only five people knew it was going on.
Yeah, and what was that? I mean, it was from what I've seen on the internet, it was called The Beast, or there was...
They referred to it as The Beast. It became, that was their pet name for it, because their first asset list that they developed had 666 assets.
Mm.
So they referred to it as The Beast since after that.
Now, when you say an asset list, what exactly is an asset?
An asset, could take the form of a website or photos on the website, videos, anything that really, you need to produce, whether it's...
That's exactly audio. Like the FBI use assets. Is that just borrowing lingo?
Maybe. I don't know. That's kind of a standard.
We should, though, get to the creation of that later, because I also want to first define what we're talking about.
Okay.
Right.
Because everybody has a definition, it seems, about what an alternate reality game is. In fact, some people are trying to throw in like World of Warcraft and Second Life, and I'm like, wait a minute, that seems to be a separate
genre. Everyone's trying to get on the bandwagon, trying to help define something that they're not necessarily having been involved in creating. It's kind of an interesting.
So how do you design? Yeah. How do you define it?
My definition
and your company
and our company. We basically look at it as interactive fiction on steroids that takes usually three elements. Typically, it takes place primarily online.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be websites that think that they're real. The game doesn't take itself as a game. There's no meta page. There's no place to sign up.
Right.
It's just all very mysterious, and you kind of happen upon things and discover things. Then that thing leads to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You dig into it. You call a phone number, and oh my God, there's somebody at the other end, or there's a voicemail that leads you to another website.
Mm-hmm.
That then there's a password entry box, and you look at what you found so far and discover a password to get any farther. So it's basically using the internet to tell a story as the main platform, but it also invades your real life.
Now, do you have to use the internet, or has that just been a tool of one of these?
This form of storytelling has become possible because of the internet.
Okay.
Because of the real-time way to update things and respond to players, perhaps, and it's just kind of... When I say that it takes place on the internet, it's primarily that. There's also one of the earmarks is real-world interaction.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the thing that defines, Second Life is not alternate reality because it's not touching upon the real world in which we live. It's a virtual world completely.
Now it is.
Exactly. Yeah, we kind of look at it as we take the games, we want to inject a little magic into the real world, inject something that makes you feel like you're a hero, a superhero, or a spy.
Right.
You're walking down a street and a bank of payphones rings and you pick it up and you're getting a call from the game.
It's like the game.
It's like the game, except
with
no
one's face.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
It's fake, really. And there's no taxis dipping you in, San Francisco Bay.
I was going to ask what you thought of the Michael Douglas
movie. I was wondering
if
you were going to take it to that next
step. A lot of people refer to the game as kind of an earmark. It's an easy way to explain to people what it is. But in reality, the players, you really do know what the boundaries are.
Sure.
You don't, there's no question, and you know that you're playing it. But at the same time, those realities, those lines are blurred.
Right.
Because whenever you do, we take it, when we produce something, it's very real. Every time you put a phone number down, there's somebody, there's something at the other end of that line. Anytime you see an email address or a website, it's, you know, there's you email that, you'll get an auto response.
Right.
And maybe you'll hear a fax machine and you'll get a fax, or maybe your phone will ring and it'll be a character from the game.
This all sounds so awesome. Like every time I hear about this, I get really jazzed about it, and you know, finding out how to do all these things is always like,
it really is awesome.
Is the end result almost always promotional?
Right now, up to now, the games have mostly been promotional because that's been an easy way for them to be, you know, the revenue model has been easy. There are some standalone games that are being tried. There's Perplex City is one of them.
But see, that was a tricky one
because
that one started out as this mysterious thing. And then it seemed like, oh, and you can buy these cards after like months. And you're like, oh, there's actually something to purchase at the end of this.
Right. Now, we just put out one called a new product that Sean Stewart, who's our lead writer, fantastic writer. He wrote everything since The Beast. He just published, he and Jordan Weissman just published a book called Kathy's Book.
Right.
And what they tried
This is incredible.
Yeah, what they tried to do is capture the essence of the alternate reality game, but kind of in a permanent form. See, the problem with alternate reality games up to now is they've been done in real time. So if you catch them at the beginning or near the beginning, you're in great shape. And the story unfolds in real time.
Right.
And there's a, you know.
This has been my problem.
Yeah, there's an act one, act two, and act three, and sure, players can determine sometimes which way that can go. If you miss it, you kind of miss out. So Kathy's book is an attempt to, here's a novel form, but there are all these alternate reality game elements in it, where you call the phone number. You found this girl's journal that's basically her entire life, and there's a big mystery surrounding it. And you open it, it's the same thing. There's phone numbers, you call them, there's real, you know, there's a voicemail at the other end of the line that gives you more clues that you can kind of delve into this whole subdermal story in addition to what's in the book that helps you solve what's really going on in the book. And
I had a concept of a documentary. Remember I pitched that documentary to you guys about There was the same type of thing, is to have a, you know, a cold case documentary that ends in the middle as if it never got aired. And really, the whole thing is an, kind of an alternate reality game, but ended up being a pain in the ass.
Now,
I wasn't smart enough to write the whole damn thing.
So really, alternate reality games have three elements as far as I'm concerned. They have the story element. It's a, it's a new way of telling a story. They have what I like to call an archaeological element, where you're using the internet to discover things and to dig and find new things. And you're finding this narrative. It's not being told to you. Like, you're not, like, characters aren't emailing you and saying, I did this yesterday, and then I did this, and then I did this. Oh, no, what do I do now? It's kind of like digging in the sand, and you find a pottery shard, you know. And so you dig a little bit more, and you find more shards. And then eventually you've got enough information where you could not only put that pot together, reassemble it, but you can actually find out things about the civilization that made it. So, so you're kind of digging for these things, and you're finding almost like the results of the story as opposed to the story just being told to you.
Right.
And so you've, I like to say they're playing connect the dots. We're giving the dots, but the players have to connect them and put the story together. And then the third aspect is what I said before, where it reaches out and inserts a little bit of magic in the real world. You know, there may be a dead drop. There may be a place where a character says, you know, I've left a CD-ROM with some very important data, you know, on a rock, you know, in Griffith Park or somewhere. And players will go out there and, oh, my God, there's something actually here.
Right.
And they get that information, and then they tell it to the community. Typically, there's a big community that builds up around these.
Does that sort of kill the players in New York? Does that knock them out of the game?
Well, in that instance, yeah. But if you design it well, I mean, you can do things so that a lot of people can get involved.
Love Bees had the a nationwide,
worldwide. There were payphones around the world.
Oh, it was okay. Worldwide payphone deal where you had to be at a right payphone at the right time in the right coordinates. And then you got a code, I believe.
You got a phone call with asking you for a code
and
word.
And then you went onto the website and entered the code, and it would unlock. Is that what it was?
You would say there was voice recognition software, and you would say the answer.
Oh,
and,
really?
And it would, in real time, it would update the website. And you would hear a new snippet of this story. I Love Bees, for those of you that don't know, was basically a six-hour radio drama. And that was unlocked a snippet like 30 seconds at a time, a minute at a time. And players, by answering these payphones and answering correctly, would unlock a new snippet of audio. You'd hear it on the phone, but at the same time, the website would update. And all of a sudden, that WAV file would become available. So it was all very well.
The brilliant thing about that was you really got... I mean, I was looking at the forums and things. It was going crazy at the time. The great thing about that is the community that the buzz that happened around that was everyone wanted to make sure that somebody was taking a position. So beforehand, you would get these... You would see the emails going across like... Does someone have this area covered? Because I'll drive 3 hours to do it. Right. You know, so you had this group solution feeling, like everyone wanted to get their piece. Because if someone missed it, it didn't upload.
Right, right.
You missed the chunk.
Yeah, there was some doubling up. As far as that went, you know, there would be like a group of six phones
that had
to unlock
clue.
A specific thing, and so somebody had to find one of those six phones. But some of them were like in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Now, were there any of those that didn't get unlocked?
There were. I think at the end of the day, there were like four or five audio files that didn't get unlocked.
Are they still out there?
They after Endgame. The producers then
you gotta leave them hanging forever. Well, that's what they talk about. The missing files.
I think eventually they left them, but you know, I mean, because they wanted to tell the whole story. And
right.
So
now I had two questions.
Always a little puzzle. There's always some puzzles hanging. That's okay.
I had two questions. One was because this is interactive, because this is sort of group media in many ways. Has it ever gotten out of control where the story itself has gotten under the control of the players?
Not in our experience, because...
Or is that something you want?
But wait, yeah. I mean, I would think that user-created content helps you guys out. Like, if other people start websites about what the solutions might be, then that's content being created for free.
Right.
For you.
Right.
I mean, that's like the best-case scenario.
Sure. Sure. You want that to happen to an extent, but ultimately you got to, and for security reasons too, to keep people from griefing the game or some hijacking the game, you need to be able to design in ways that can keep things under control like that. Ways for the players to know for sure this site is in game, this site is not. This is a fan created
thing. I can't even imagine griefers getting involved with that.
Oh, you can't?
No. Do you have an example of a griefer?
Griefers will attack anything.
Yeah. Well, basically, you know, not so much with our game. Well, even during the Beast, people made websites that they tried to make look like they were in game. Really? They tried to add the content, and we encouraged that.
See,
to a
that's
point.
what I wondered whether or not people would, because that would be like exactly what I would see a griefer doing.
Yeah, we can encourage, and especially nowadays with videos, releasing videos on YouTube and all that kind of stuff. You know, even clues are everywhere. That's the challenge when you make the real world, the playground, you know.
Lonely Girl 15.
Then how do you make it?
Yeah, Lonely Girl, exactly.
Right. Who's Lonely Girl?
Then how do you pop it? How do you pop what is individually yours and say, yes, this is in-game?
Well, the easiest way for that is typically we'll, in the case of websites, we'll, you know, all the websites will be hosted on the same server. So that's the easy way, you know. Well, this site is hosted on that server with the exact same, you know, IP address and stuff, so...
Are they puzzles or are they just Easter eggs? Do any of these ever have solutions or are they experiences that don't need to be solved? Because I'm wondering...
No, typically the puzzles, as part of it, they're basically gates to more information to progress the storyline.
So it's not a mystery to be solved. It's a mystery
to
be experienced.
It's not like there's going to be one winner of this thing.
Yeah, because I always, you know, you have to outsmart... If you're going to do it so that it's solvable, you have to outsmart the entire world population, which seems impossible.
Right. These are basically what happens is huge. They're community driven. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're working, and that's what makes the puzzles really hard to design, because you're working not against one person. You're working against kind of this hive mind of everybody. Yeah. You know, somebody out there is going to know, 18th century loot tablature, and be able to solve this.
Yeah.
You know, with the Beast, they said, we designed these puzzles to be, to be lasting, 2 months or whatever. And they were all solved within the first couple days.
Yeah.
Holy.
So that's encouraging. We encourage that. So and even
makes
with
you
this,
want to give people more of a crack at the deficit.
Well, we did a thing for we did a game called Last Call Poker that for the Activision game Gun that came out.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah,
a lot of your stuff is listed on Wikipedia, and I had wondered what is a cemetery based live event.
Yeah, well, I'll explain. Basically,
the contradiction in terms.
Matt went on a date. I think you could label it.
Exactly. Hey, words hurt.
The concept. What we do at 42, the difference that we do as opposed to a lot of the other games is we kind of stealth launch almost everything. Mm-hmm. We basically launched this fully functional online poker site as an online poker site. Mm-hmm. We didn't launch it as a game. We didn't advertise it as a game. It was Last Call Poker. Come on, free poker. This is back, you know, a year and a half ago. Online poker was huge. It's kind of waning now. And so there were ads on, you know, Maxim or whatever, you know, for online poker. So people get there, and lo and behold, weird things start happening when they're in there playing poker. Just strange happenings go on, and all of a sudden somebody will find this. Everybody had a user profile, and somebody would find a user profile of somebody, and it would have a video attached to it, and there would be a video that would kind of launch into the game. Nobody really knew what it was, what it was advertising, if it was advertising anything at all. All they knew is there were some press releases. There was this guy who died who founded this website. Now this website was haunted. Mm-hmm. And the longer people got into it, all of a sudden dead people started showing up at the poker tables and playing poker with these guys. And so the story was is that...
That's cool.
Is that this site was... founded by this guy who's now dead. He was haunting the site, and he wanted to get this story out. There was some grand injustice involving his, grandniece that needed to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's not clear what's going on, just weird things happening. And you don't have a sign-up play. Well, in this case, you did. You had to sign up to play poker. Mm-hmm. But it's never saying, this is a game, and it's here to promote gun. Mm-hmm. You just kind of play along and discover more stuff and get in deeper and deeper. And then in answer to the question, the poker or the cemetery games were a result of what was showing up on the site. Lucky had designed this game called... Lucky was the guy who designed the site that was now dead. Lucky.
Okay.
He had designed this game called Tombstone Hold'em. Mm-hmm. And he wanted people to go out to a specific cemetery and play this game where you actually use cemetery tombstones as playing cards. He had a whole list of, you know, use the birth dates and then the shape at the top determine the suit. Mm. And you play with your friends and you play these games of Tombstone Hold'em. And if you did it correctly, then something would happen on the website. So the players go out and did it the very first time. They followed all these instructions. They did this thing. And when they completed what they were supposed to do, the website all of a sudden went back in time. So the entire website, all of a sudden, it was no longer 2005. It was now 1941. Everything on the website changed. All the avatars of the poker rooms changed to, you know, 1941 GIs. And nobody knew what was going on or why and where this was leading. All they know is, as the story unfolded, it was all about this cursed gun. Dun, dun, dun.
Right.
You know, and then finally, as time went on, then people realized. By that time, they didn't care because the earmark with 42's games is that the entertainment we provide, it's more entertainment than advertisement.
Right.
We're providing a very rich and deep and immersive and interactive narrative that stands on its own totally, you know, apart from what it is that they're actually, you know, promoting.
I think you know what's great about, you know, the model that you just stated is who did the Lost one? The one that just was
who was behind that.
This is crazy. Well, they say
the initiative thing.
American Television Network ABC joined with Channel 4 in the UK and Australia's Channel 7 in promoting a revamped website for the Hanzo Foundation.
Right. So
it's very very similar.
The problem with that, and a lot of people got into that one, but It got to be really blatant of the websites they directed to. Suddenly you're at like Mountain Dew or a Jeep website.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would hide an Easter egg in there. And, people can smell that advertising a million miles away.
Exactly.
And,
stop selling me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's suddenly over. You realize you're just part of a big marketing ploy.
Yeah, the average consumer is very sophisticated nowadays. And if they see a neon sign with a product placement in it, I mean, they're usually going to run the other direction.
They're out. Yeah, exactly.
James Bond.
Yeah, we were complaining about that with Bond.
And, you know, it's hard to convince your client not to put their logo everywhere. It really is like, you know, Bungie, I think, did a great job of just, I don't know what their attitude was when they, in production with you. But, I mean, you would never know that was a Halo thing for about 3 months.
Right.
I mean, you would never know it.
Right.
Actually, even toward the end, would you ever know it?
Yeah.
There was this thin connection.
But you did know where, I mean, the I Love Bees was on the trailer of the Halo, so you knew it had something to do with it.
Well, yeah, and that's why everyone got... That's why people were interested. No one was, no one had been interested by a random B site. They knew there was something hidden there.
Right.
But there was no, Master Chief didn't walk out with, a Mountain Dew can, drink in front of me, and drive off in a Jeep. You know what I mean?
Right. And there weren't links to the trailers all over the place.
Yeah,
and, you
exactly.
know, it's all very, very subtle. And basically, we're trying to work inside whatever the universe is of it that we're working at. The AI, the Beast mm-hmm. game, all took place in the AI universe, but it didn't actually, you know, tread on that movie. The content,
right?
But
right.
It kind of, and the same thing with Gun. We kind of created this universe around the Gun universe,
mm-hmm.
And that's part of the fun. Is you're getting involved, and the thrill of discovery is, you know, discovering what is this about, and that creates a lot of discussion and people trying to figure out Gun. They didn't know it was about Gun until, you know, over halfway through.
It's easy to sell to a client a 30-second spot on national television. Is it hard to convince? To get sales with this type of...
From what I hear, it's kind of out of my department because I'm mm-hmm. not usually in those pitch meetings, being a designer.
Right, yeah.
That's more producer guy role. But, for instance, the folks at Xbox and Bungie were very happy with I Love Bees.
I would think I Love Bees.
And again, it's not about selling more Halo 2 copies because that was going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty clear after the fact and during that their goal was to...
keep a buzz.
Well, create a buzz and insert Halo into the popular culture.
Right.
You know,
but they didn't do that because they just wanted everyone to say the word Halo once during the day. They want to sell copies of Halo.
Well, sure. There's brand awareness that mm-hmm. there's a whole issue of there, but that's kind of out of my...
I mean, for a year, well, maybe, I don't know, was that 9 months? Was launched about 9 months before the game actually came out or something?
Oh, it wasn't that long. No.
It wasn't that long?
No.
Oh, it seemed like forever.
It was the game was like,
clock.
I think it was like 12 weeks... Before launch.
Well,
really?
I mean, people
it seemed like
work,
forever.
It
people
did
were
seem
worked
like
up.
Yeah, they really
I mean,
were.
They were worked up to a lather about
well,
that.
You thing. Were worked up to a lather. I remember Aaron calling me up going,
it's like, G4 is
there's this thing called I Love Bees, and there's this chicken, and the website just dissolves, and yeah. stuff's going on, and you gotta go. And
I'm
like,
you saw the G4 thing about that?
Aaron, it's a bee.
Yeah, I saw the G4. They were hanging out by the phones
yeah.
and all
that. No, I mean, I Love Bees is the one that we almost always, we've talked about them several times. I mean, this comes up. Yeah. Periodically over several different of our episodes, but I do have a quick question for you, which is, do you have any moments in any of the games that you've designed that you're particularly proud of? Any things that you thought were really great twists that had a huge impact, or
oh, boy, that's a tough question. I have to think about that one.
Or
Last Call Poker had a very interesting side effect that was very touching to watch. Is that there was a lot of controversy about us using cemeteries as playgrounds. You know, there was a CNN article written about it, and people were, you know, getting up in arms, you know, don't use this, what a disrespectful thing. Mm-hmm. When in reality, the people, number one, we had to get permission of the cemeteries to do this, mm-hmm. and they were encouraging. Cemeteries used to be social areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there were kind of side missions, for lack of a better term, where we'd mm-hmm. say, if you want to earn, you know, some icon or something like that, just kind of little fun things that we would design that would be puzzles that people could go to specific cemeteries to do, you know, that we designed specific puzzles for specific cemeteries, you know, oh, go over one row, down three, you know, something like that. And
enter the name.
And if you email Lucky with this name, you know, you'll get a special icon.
Mm. Oh, well, it wasn't like put flowers on my grandmother's grave
also,
because
yeah,
I don't have time.
Exactly. There was find somebody with your birth date and go and clean up their tombstone.
Oh.
You know, stuff like that.
That's
and,
cool.
And there
that's
were
great.
Sweet.
Yeah, there were some cool moments like that where and then these players would email Lucky, you know, the character, and give them not only the information, but then they'd relate a little bit about that, the experience they had. And so many players came back with, this had such an this whole game, this whole, all these cemeteries has really had an unexpected effect on me, you know, in really kind of valuing you know, maybe my grandparents' lives or mm-hmm. the lives of those that went before me, and valuing my life now.
That's
cool. And what we went away with is they're saying, I'll never look at a cemetery the same way again.
Right.
You know, before you just kind of passed. I passed the same cemetery on the way to work every day, and it never crossed my mind. Now
they
has
walk through, they read
same
names.
Same thing with I Love Bees. You know, I still to this day, whenever I see a payphone, there's not many yeah, around.
Another call.
When do you pass a payphone?
But, you know, you see a payphone, and forevermore, you know, whenever I see a payphone, I'm going to think, I Love Bees.
Right.
You know? And it just, that was a really, really touching moment. For us, and we get to read these emails, and it's like, man, this is like big stuff happening in these players' lives. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really being impacted in a really cool way that we didn't even expect.
Okay, now because this is effectively storytelling archaeology,
mm-hmm.
when you're designing it, basically the way, only way I can perceive it in my mind is that rather than it being linear storytelling, it has a Z-axis, is you have to have a certain amount of depth to everything. So when you're doing the stories, how do you design them to say, all right, this is the puzzle for A, this is the puzzle for B, this is where we need to get to at the very end of the project, but how do we fool people along the way and still tell a linear story?
I want to piggyback a question to that is, you know, what is the production process from the storytelling concept design to actually creating these elements?
Okay. And which comes first, the product or the idea?
Don, of course, gets metaphysical.
I, personally, to me, the story is foremost. And so, like, when we designed for Last Call Poker, the story came first. We were really, you know, we'd have cool kind of puzzly ideas, you know.
Right.
But you can't just put a puzzle in for puzzle's sake. I mean, they all have to be make sense in context.
Do you have, like, Johnny, the esoteric guy who just goes in and, like, picks random facts out of the air and goes, loot? Yes, definitely. It's going to be on the loot.
I hope a poker company comes along because I've got some great gameplay ideas.
No, that guy is usually me.
Ah, okay.
And you just kind of file stuff away and say, maybe someday I can use this.
Right.
But like with Last Call, as the story was written, then it's our job to then design how that story is going to be delivered, which can be, you know, a challenge because
right.
you're saying, well, what makes sense in context? What's realistic in this? You know, we've kind of built this fiction.
So there
universe.
Is a certain what is realistic to this.
Well, yeah, you kind of
because it is X-Files.
You create your own universe with its own rule set.
Hmm.
You know, everything and then everything's kind of got to make sense in that rule set. Like, for instance, in Last Call, players could not directly touch a character. They couldn't directly contact a character unless they were dead. Because there were living characters taking place in present day.
Right.
But we had to kind of insulate those characters.
Yeah, how do you
because
say,
you don't,
know,
want
don't call
saying,
Cynthia.
Yeah, you don't want somebody calling our heroine, the main, you know, the hot chick in distress, Lucy. Mm-hmm. You don't want somebody emailing her and saying, dude, I check out lastcallpoker.com. Like, your whole life is on there. It's weird, you know, you can't, then the fourth wall is... explodes and, you know, the everything goes dark and everything implodes on itself. So it's all got to make sense from that standpoint because you've created this rule set and you got to kind of stick with it. And then actually kind of sometimes you can paint yourself into a corner, but it helps the integrity of the game overall. You know, you're not just saying, you know, then you're not doing lame things that the players go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Or,
right.
Yeah, but, you know, that, because of this, you don't create kind of plot holes.
That's the thing that drives me absolutely nuts
yeah.
is when a game goes off the rails like that and you're like, why? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we try and keep everything, if something is talked about or done or it happens in the real world, we do our best to make sure that it's as researched as well as possible and as authentic and real as possible.
So the salesperson comes in and says, okay, so-and-so company just came to us and we need to design a game.
Geeks On comes to you and says, we need to design a Geeks On game.
So do the writers squirrel away first? Or what's the first process of this thing?
There's a lot of brainstorming, a lot of conceptualization of different ideas that are, you know, bandied back and forth between, you know, prospective clients. And you know, you just keep doing that until you settle upon a concept.
And as part of that, what type of goals does a client come to you? Do they say, I need this to happen. I need to generate... a certain amount of traffic to a website, or I needed to,
what are their goals?
I think that really depends. I think that varies.
So that's
people.
That's
different
changed.
People have different ideas,
okay.
And again, this whole thing's still being defined. Every time we do a new one, we're making a lot of it up as we go. I don't want to, you know, in a way, we're making up the rules as we go.
Sure, yeah.
Because we're inventing things as we go along. We're always trying to use new technology too, so that's a part of it too.
Is there also what makes it so fresh is because your limitations are whatever you can. You know, define the magic.
Right.
You know?
And as we go, we learn stuff that works well and learn stuff that doesn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is this, there
well,
a
wait,
level.
Wait, there's a great question there. What doesn't work well? Can
right.
you talk about some things that you've decided?
Oh. Yeah, those four payphones, those not so good.
No. I'd say the main thing that people seem to miss is momentum, is gauging and maintaining momentum with the narrative and with the story and with the game. A lot of people kind of design stuff and then 2 weeks will go by and nothing seems to really be happening, or they
right.
or they set you up to do this what seems like busy work that doesn't really work in the game universe or doesn't make logical sense
right.
just for the sake of like unlocking stuff, and it's not fun. We have the advantage of there's a lot of game designers in 42 as opposed to kind of advertisers. So a lot of they have a real good feel for what's fun. Alan Lee is a genius guy. He has a great sense for, you know, we'll talk about ideas and go, well, yeah, that just doesn't sound fun. It's interesting and stuff, but where's the fun part of that? You know, so a lot of that comes to momentum and with flow. A lot of the criticism for the Lost game was they had some momentum issues,
right?
From what I hear.
Well, I noticed that, like, Isle of Bees had literally a timer. So even if there was downtime, everyone knew.
Yeah, X amount of time.
Something.
You know, we've got 3 days. You know, like, everyone was watching the clock, it seems.
Yeah, and
well.
Plus with our games, we try and make a consistent update time so that people are creatures of habit. You know, so there's like an update time that's pretty consistent during the week, and then maybe one on the weekend. So they kind of know sense. What to expect. And can, you know, we're used to doing things on a schedule. You know, my favorite TV show is on, you know, X night at 8 o'clock. Of course, now with DVRs, we don't have to worry about that as much.
But. Is there a certain level of one-upsmanship of your own products now? Because what I've seen, I mean, specifically on Wikipedia, they talk about how it's become more and more of an exterior social event where basically there are more live street events, games, stuff like that, where people are actually have gone from payphones to cemeteries to, you know, have you like now said, okay, next thing's a band, next thing's, you know, whatever.
Well, sure. I mean, we're always raising the bar on ourselves, so that's always the challenge. You know, well, we've done that, now what?
Right.
And if I told you, I'd have to kill you and myself.
Halo 3 is coming out.
Yeah, there we go.
Ring,
yeah.
Ring, ring.
I love wasps.
I love wasps.
That's a great idea, Don. We'll edit that out.
Put down the gun.
Crap. Crap, you already solved it.
Oh, no, man.
So what type of technology do you guys use? Is it,
they don't use Macs, Aaron.
No Macintosh?
No Macs.
Well, sure, if they want to advertise the 10% of the possible audience.
I mean, you use like a poker game type of thing. You've been using
obviously, and I can only speak to last, you know, past projects.
Right.
We've always tried to use. I mean, it's funny. You look at the Beast, and everybody was on dial-up modems, and back then the big technology was like, ooh, Flash.
Yeah,
you know, like there were a couple of Flash things, and it was like, ooh, this is cool. I've never seen this, you know, little anime. You know, there were a couple of puzzles that were actually based in Flash, and they took like 5 minutes to download on my little, you know, modem.
Are you constantly just then scanning the internet to see what resources you could use? Like, hey, you know, YouTube's out there now for us to use, or MySpace is out there for us
YouTube,
to use.
Using YouTube, you know, creates some problems, some security issue problems. Mm-hmm. You know, you post something on YouTube, how do players verify that it's really from you and not from some guy?
Right.
So, you know, I personally like to try and, you know, keep things contained.
A little more
But as far as technology goes, you know, yeah, we use the poker engine. I mean, we built a fully functional poker site.
That's great.
That was just as a really just as a cover, as a front.
Like you
for
could
a
just
big
play
game.
Poker there if you wanted.
Yeah, and people did. People did. And I wish. And they just the site just went dark. Or else you
yeah,
could go
I clicked
there and
on
see,
it.
Yeah,
no,
yeah that sucks.
Have you been contacted by any government agencies?
Not me personally.
Matt,
I don't know.
Matt asked that question to all of
everybody.
Well, I'm just wondering because
that might
this
explain
seems...
the sore on my back.
This seems like
that was the alien abduction.
Well, it's interesting because I'm working as a game designer for a conventional video game company right now.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of our focus is constantly what platform are we working on? Okay, constrain the idea to the platform. Okay, now
we're
constrain the idea to and listening to the concept of okay, our platform are telephones, answering machines, BlackBerries, video games,
internet that moves,
newspapers.
The mind sort of boggles when you know just knowing how hard it is to deal with one platform to suddenly think about a game that's not only crossing all media, but trying to get across an amorphous message that you don't necessarily get. You don't necessarily need everyone to get, you know? Like, again, the focus with my job is making sure that everybody understands that video, you know, every step along the way.
No, this we don't. That's not a – and it's kind of freeing in a way. You know,
I love
the platformers
that.
Thing.
I'm so jealous of you right now. You concept. Do you have no idea?
Do you have deliberately unanswered questions? Like, we're not going to provide an answer for this the end of the storyline. That's just going to be a question mark.
Well, did you have dead ends or
– You know, that's a writer issue. I don't think there's been a lot of loose ends. I mean, real life has loose ends, but I think with, you know, Last Call Poker, with the Beast, certainly with I Love Bees. Although I Love Bees, you know, of course, I Love Bees led into Halo 2.
Right.
You know, it was kind of leading up to the invasion, and the players, the twist there at the end was the players discover, oh my God, we actually told the Covenant where Earth was by what we did in this game, and we triggered the invasion, so we triggered Halo 2.
And what's with the fact that Audrey 2 is in Halo 2? I'm
Audrey
confused.
2?
Well, the gigantic plant beast. Alien 4 quote. What did she give you? A human womb! I mean, come on. It's like, Halo, suck. God, I was like, I liked the game up until then, and then I just bailed.
Well, just real quick, talking about the technology thing, mm-hmm. the other example would be, obviously, with I Love Bees, that entire call system was all, you know, was custom coding.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Again, that was entirely an automated system.
Wow.
Calling all those payphones and listening to the responses and then dynamically updating the website in real time.
Yeah, I mean, there seemed like there was a big mechanism going on. Like, you could feel
there's
like
a lot,
there's someone
guys,
big behind.
Yeah, our coding, our programming guys, they're genius too. I mean,
did you ever like set up cameras by the phone banks to film people rushing the cameras or rushing the telephones?
There were so many real other people's cameras. I mean,
we kind of from that aspect, we let the players do that because they're eager to.
Okay.
You know, they're happy to.
Huh.
Although we did, I wasn't with 42 at the time. I was a player of I Love Bees, but there were some of the called themselves puppet masters. That's, you know, kind of our producer role, mm-hmm. puppet masters. Kind of incognito around some of the payphones, you know, pretending to be players, just kind of watching.
Keep your eyes peeled for the I Love Wasps. it might be
well, now you gave it away. Now we got to change it.
You probably get first knowledge or at least hints. Do you go through these games at all?
This is why I don't tell him anything.
Well, yes. I get lots of clues, and I'm not supposed to say anything. He sometimes spills, you give me a little hint, but he never says anything directly. So I can't say anything to get him in trouble or anything like that.
Breaking into his office and going through his computer has nothing to do with it whatsoever.
No.
Have you guys ever had a trigger that, like, I Love Bees, I believe solely was triggered by the decoding of the website and the trailer? Was that the first time anyone could...
That was what confirmed that it was with...
Was there any way of finding the website besides that, though?
Little jars of honey were sent to various websites.
That's right.
And actually, ARGN.com, which is a site I founded, we were sent one of those honey jars, and inside were letters. And that when you dumped them out in the honey, it was a lot of fun. And then they would spell out "I love bees."
Okay.
In the honey, it would spell "I love bees."
The letters, they were like little vinyl letters floating in the honey. So you'd dump out the honey, and it had all these little letters that you would.
I just want to point out too, my dad doing this. You know, he gets a box in the mail with honey, and I'm like, Dad, what is this? Like, is somebody after us? Like, who is planning to, like, kill us or something? Thinking, like, what is it? I love bees. Who is crazy?
Yeah, see, and we didn't know. And we got this honey, like, probably 3 or 4 days before the trailer was released. So we had 3 or 4 days to mull over, what the hell is this? You know, we kind of thought it was some grassroots. You know, a lot of people are trying to put these games on, and they would send ARGN, like, little, you know, clues in the mail.
Right.
So at first I thought, yeah, this might be one of those. But then when I went to the website, actually my wife was the first person to go to I Love Bees. I want that for the record.
Oh, wow.
She's going, this is weird. You might want to take a look at this because I'm out in the kitchen wiping honey off my hands. And she goes, there's some countdown. So I looked at it, and then when I looked at the site, I thought, oh, this is not just some guy in his basement. I mean, because the coding behind the back end of this site is pretty – there's some interesting things going on.
Huh.
So we'll have to watch this.
Have you ever had a trigger not be recognized? Like, have you guys had to goose it? Like, oh, God, we got to send another jar to somebody smarter.
We got to send another jar.
You always want to design in some redundancy.
Okay, just
so
in
that
case.
Hopefully you don't have to do stuff like that.
Okay.
So what's the next step for this? Is it going to go to, you know, I mean, since this is viral marketing, effectively, you know.
You don't have to reveal any I Love Wasps details.
Yeah, but is it going to go, I mean, well,
it's a lot bigger and different than a viral marketing.
Right.
You know.
I'm just wondering whether or not the next step is that it steps out of the entertainment industry and, you know, do we use this as, you know, political? Do we use it in the political environment? Do we use it?
Oh yeah,
you know,
like we need to gum up that
system like the
more.
Presidential campaign. They're gonna
well,
exactly.
It's interesting you ask that. These are great questions. Alternate reality game type things have been used even so far. Right now, they've been used in kind of corporate training atmospheres. Companies will hire people to produce small versions of these for them to use as team building things within corporations.
Really?
And training
a friend of mine was hired to do a game for the city of Minneapolis where they involved it was an elaborate treasure hunt that lasted over a week throughout the city. And I think they used a lot of this ideas that you guys set up.
Well, actually, Pete brought me back my book, which was the original Masquerade by Kit Williams. It was a book that was basically done in the 1970s. This guy who had buried a treasure, and then he, you know, did this whole book that had crazy clues on each page.
Well, there was another one called like Treasure Hunt or something. Or
David Blaine did one too recently.
Oh, David Blaine.
Didn't he?
Well, there's also
another. He actually buried himself.
Yeah,
and
he had to find
before,
him.
Before 9/11.
There's a countdown clock there, too.
Before 9/11. Before 9/11, there was another game that you paid for, and they would phone call you and send you faxes.
They got shut down, I think.
Majestic.
Yeah. And I think it was because of 9/11. People didn't want crazy phone calls in the night and stuff like that.
There were a lot of contributing factors, I think. That was a pay-to-play game. You paid your monthly fee, and I played that game, and I enjoyed it. My frustration with it was, okay, I've paid my money, and you got basically 7 minutes of content a day. And you were like, you know, I want like as much as I want to play. You know, you buy a game and you want to play it. If you want to put in a half hour, great. If you want to play for 4 hours, great. With this, you were kind of at the mercy. You'd be kind of be checking, going, oh, my icon is grayed out. I can't do anything. Oh, there's nothing ready for me. Blah, blah, blah. So then you'd log out. Then you'd check again later. There'd still be nothing and stuff. But the concept
it wasn't complex enough to keep you occupied for a month?
Well,
it's
a catch-22. It's a catch-22 because all of a sudden, if people are paying. On the other hand, you don't want to make things too hard because then they're like, well, geez, I paid this money and this is just a big frustration.
I'm an idiot.
So you got to a certain extent, if people are paying, you got to spoon feed them a little bit.
That's
a fine line, you know. So for me, I'm like going, geez, hand me the answers, you know, or make it. And it seemed like it was stuff that seemed like it was not linear actually really was very linear. And
I
so that was
way reading the Da Vinci Code. I was so angry all the way through, like, it's written backwards. That was 12 pages it took you to figure out it's written backwards.
That was one puzzle.
It took 12 pages.
And it stumped, like, you know, humanity for, you know, 2,000 years just because it was written backwards.
It wasn't. It was written. It was Da Vinci's handwriting. That was the only thing that was written backwards.
Yeah. Too bad the Da Vinci scholar took 12 pages to figure that out.
What about the game The Art of the Heist?
Art of the Heist.
Yeah, I've heard about this, but I don't know what it is.
Art of the Heist was a campaign for Audi.
Oh.
Used a lot of the same elements, classic alternate reality game elements. And it started off with an Audi getting stolen from a showroom in downtown New York where, you know, there was a website that intimated this. Again, it was like, okay, here we've got this fictional stuff happening on the web or on this webpage. Mm-hmm. And it talks about this Audi being stolen from this place. Well, lo and behold, if you go to this dealership, there's a glass pane knocked out and there's police tape up and there's a security guard there. And they've actually, right into the real world.
Wow.
That's
cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So how does one find out about these? I mean, you know, again, I always catch
I want to get involved on ground zero of the next one.
Yeah.
The Geeks On, the game.
Easy. The best place, you can just go to the Alternate Reality ARGNET, Alternate Reality Gaming Network, ARGN.com.
Which I founded.
And then when I went to 42, I handed over to some other folks to run, which they're doing very well.
That's cool.
And it's kind of the basic news portal for... Mm-hmm. Alternate reality games, and they even have a subscription, an announced list that you can sign up. That if a game launches, you can get an email about it, or if if somebody discovers a game,
and we'll put that link on our website.
ARGN.com, and that's its sister site, Unfiction.com, is where a lot of the discussion goes. There's forums there at Unfiction, where a lot of these the community lives.
I think they also have a netcast, the alternate reality
and
gaming
they just started
netcast.
Yeah. And they're doing great there too. So very informative. It's a great way to kind of keep
I haven't
up
listened
what's
to
going
those
on.
But I know they have a lot of links on there that goes to all the companies your company and a lot of the other
right
people.
Now there's a lot of kind of grassroots games. People love these so much. They get involved and they do them. We did one before I was with 42. We did an independent game based on in the Matrix universe. Because we kind of knew that the Matrix
wasn't
going. And
that's still going, right? I mean, you can at least go to the site.
The site is still there. It's Metacortex, Metacortech.
Was it better than the third movie?
And I won't say.
Because that movie sucked.
But again, it was the same. It was a grassroots thing. And we did that because we had played the Beast and we wanted to see more of that. And now...
Oh, that didn't have a client behind it?
No, it was an independent. We built it as fan fiction.
Okay,
it was very extensive
cool.
fan fiction because we never touched on anybody's
property
IP.
That's
fan fiction.
And that was crazy, by the way. When we did that, and when people discovered that, again, it was a stealth launch. Mm-hmm. Basically, a Google ad showed up for this fictional company that showed up in the Matrix, Metacortex, where Neo, Anderson worked, and people went, and it looked like a real website, and it built itself as the largest software company in the world.
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, it looks like a corporate website.
And then we got such massive millions of hits on this site, and people just going nuts, and we're like, are we insane? What have we done here? And these are all Matrix fans, so they're all trying to hack into the servers and all.
Oh my God.
But a lot of people are doing that now. There's a lot of games out there right now that are kind of grassroots, independent games.
Oh, that's cool.
And the corporate, bigger budget games, there's a lot less of those going on. But they're, that's not to say these smaller indie games can't be good, because they can be.
So can we create one? I mean, can Geeks?
Sure.
I mean, what
yeah,
is
no,
this? How does
can
one
can you do
one?
This on a smaller scale? Where we want to do it for our friends. It's like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah. How would you suggest building something like
people
that?
People do local games. A lot of people, university students will do them for folks at their university, and scavenger hunt things will take place on campus. Really, the best way to learn about it is to just kind of lurk on the forums and play it.
Right.
The people that played Metacortex enjoyed it so much they actually wrote a book about the experience that actually was just published like a week ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is very cool. It's an entire game from a player perspective. So if you want to get a feel for that, that's a really good one.
Do you remember what it's called?
The Project Moo Archives. Project Moo was our code name for the game, M-U, and that's a word that means your question can't be answered because it's based on wrong assumptions.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Can you tell us a little more about Metacortex and what the you've told us about some of the other things you've done, but can you tell us about what the design was with that and some of the things you did with it?
We wanted to create a game that, again, had that very kind of Black Ops stealth, nobody knows who's behind it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? And never announcing.
A la The Matrix. Right?
Yeah. And, okay. And the cool thing, to me, The Matrix really lent itself perfectly to this genre because we could then create our fictional universe here as if we're in The Matrix.
Right.
And it basically revolved around a bunch of characters that we developed that slowly in time kind of come to the realization that they're living in the Matrix,
It's like
and
alternate reality game.
It was like
alternate
reality. Yeah, exactly. It really kind of lent itself really well.
My friend at work, by the way, wants me to suggest that you use
Second Life?
Second Life, to hide a clue in Second Life so that you have to go to an alternate reality to get to the alternate reality.
That's actually my next question, is whether or not it's possible to interact so that you have, because Second Life's now getting a ton of press, and they even have a Reuters news agency now, so they're effectively becoming parallel to where we're at. Is it possible to do parallels in so that you have to have a puzzle in one universe that's not real and a puzzle in our universe that is real?
I could see doing
and
that,
and that's the connection.
I could see part of it being used as part of a bigger game, but there's a lot of people banding about well, let's do an alternate reality game within Second Life. And to me, it misses the whole point in this, yeah. in that a big earmark of what we do is when we invade the real world.
Right.
And that's what makes it cool.
Otherwise, it's World of Warcraft.
It's just an adventure game. You know, yeah. for instance, you know, if you're walking
one big
around
Easter egg,
yeah, you're walking around Second Life, and you look over and you see, you know, this, you know, the invisible swordsman, you know, or some guy, you know, a little plant that you
or
click and
fail it, to see the invisible
yeah, you fail to see the invisible swordsman. You know, you see it and you click it, and it turns into this little magic mushroom man or something like that, who gives you a clue, and it leads you to what's
wow, right. The '60s were
you
fun
know,
for you.
Yeah, you know, that's done all the time in adventure games. But if you're walking down the street in the real world and, you know, you see this glowing fruit on the ground and you click it, you know, now that would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, but
I totally agree that it's an entirely different thing. I mean, anybody can write a video game where you walk around, you get a clue, and you saw
right.
it. And I mean, that's video games.
I think what they're doing is very innovative and very cool. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, I mean, Myst did this, tried to do this with, you know, having a game space that was a multiplayer game space that was mm-hmm. an adventure game that took place on a server. And I think it's really cool and really neat, but they should not call it an alternate reality game.
Right.
I think they need to call it something else, because it's really, in a lot of ways, not. Most ways, not.
I think
in
we
my
should
opinion.
Do one.
Okay.
I think you should, too.
Let's do it. We'll come and hire 42 Entertainment.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't have a lot of money, but
yeah.
there have been a lot.
I'm working on it.
There are a lot of people trying to imitate what you guys have done now.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at things that other people have done, are there things that you look at that you particularly dislike? You know, that you think they're doing particularly poorly? And is there anything that you see that you think, wow, that's really great, and you really think is creative and inventive, and you like?
Yeah, talk shit. Come
yeah.
on.
Now is your chance.
Yeah. 2 years from now, you'll probably be
well,
working at the company.
You can speak in generalities. You don't have to
tell me this. You know, a lot of these guys are my friends. I do.
Yeah.
I know a lot of these developers.
And you'll be working
too.
There in 5 years.
Yeah.
Away,
well, but
be honest,
right now, it's so much a very experimental genre, you know, and I would much rather see new things being tried and fail than to see, oh, well, this formula works. Let's just do the same thing.
It's all payphone bit, you know.
Well, then,
I mean, obviously, if somebody made a payphone game, that would be like, yeah, yes. great idea, you yeah. know, but you know what I mean?
The second half of that, then, is there anything you see that you really like, you know, in particular?
As far as the games that are out there now?
Yeah.
Or things that have happened recently, you know, just anything.
Like the Art of the Heist. I heard that they used video in their development, which was new.
Isle of Wasps.
It's already been done.
You know what? The Isle of Wasps game. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. I wish I'd have thought of that.
Yeah, I was working on Isle of Emus. So, just didn't go anywhere.
So I was going to ask what was next for you, and you know, if there's anything you want
to
probe, but you can't.
Here's the deal. If you hear of something announced, it's probably not us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because we, there's, you know, obviously, you know, we like to just kind of pounce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alon and Jordan were referred to as ninja marketers.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I should put that on my business card.
When you feel like you've discovered something and you've unearthed it, like you said, the archaeology aspect of it, you know, you come up to the first fossil and
to me,
oh my God, that was
me. That is huge. To me, personally, that's a huge part of what is so damn fun about these games is, oh my God, I saw this and I discovered this, even if it's just like a new website that's obviously in-game, I solved this little piece, or I put two and two together and put these two shards of pottery together, and it led me to this whole new website.
And I could be the only one.
And oh my God, I got to post this fast, it's really a great.
Unfortunately,
rush.
When you get to the post, 300 people had already beaten you because you're so dense, Aaron. Yeah. That,
but that's just a huge. We refer to it as, you know, having the players fall down a rabbit hole, and it really feels that way when it's successfully done well. If you talk to the Metacortex players, they use those terms a lot. They just couldn't believe when they first discovered the site, and we did the same thing. We started with a countdown. For Metacortex, people found the site, went there, and it was just a countdown. And by the time the countdown hit zero, I mean, they were slamming our servers. It barely stayed up when we finally updated. Mm. And then there was just, boom, all of a sudden, this humongous amount of content that was there all of a sudden, that five different websites that were all really deep and subdermal layers of story that people were then digging into and discovering stuff and posting stuff and talking about it. And then like on Halloween, we had some, you know, quote unquote malfunction where the players actually, 1,000 players got a phone call on Halloween night, you know, that was embedded
That's
with huge clues.
Awesome.
They were hearing voicemail accounts from various characters in the game because of some corruption out at the headquarters, you know. Hmm. But that's what they talk about when they're just going, you know, I was at a party with my friends. The phone rang. I listened to this. And all of a sudden, I didn't care about the party anymore. I'm running into my laptop trying to check and see what's going on and trying to check the updates and check
wow.
the forums
and
check the posts.
All that mechanism with the phone calls had been done grassroots.
We did that grassroots. You know, you'd be surprised at what you can, how cheap some things are to do, and how cost effective things are to do. If you want to run an independent game, you can do it right. You know, people use free sites, which I don't like. There's the security thing too. There's no accountability. But you know, websites are so cheap to host anymore. And
I mean, if
you've
got like 100 people that you kind of know doing it, then you know, it's not. They're not gonna.
It's kind of
based
that scavenger hunt we were going to do.
Yeah. Metacortex was unique in that obviously we had the Matrix fan base as a core that was so crazy. So, you know, we had, you know, thousands of players in our database, which isn't the case for most independent kind of grassroots games.
Yeah. But that's
so,
okay.
But we took advantage of that. We phoned as many of them as we could afford because it was kind of out of our pockets. Yeah. But, you know, that was the memorable thing. You know, it's that... Oh my God! This, you know, the game called me in the middle, and now all of a sudden and that's what hooked me when I played The Beast. You know, I was heading off to lunch, and my cell phone rang, and it was a character from The Beast, and I knew something had updated, and so I didn't care about lunch anymore. I ran back into my office and hopped on, you know, my old computer and.
Wow.
Check out what was happening.
Very cool.
Wow.
Well, thanks for coming out.
Yeah,
great question. I hope that made sense. It's just, it's
fine. If it didn't make sense, we'll actually seed clues to your email address throughout various websites across the world for our listeners to get.
Yeah, just call me anytime.
Right.
but, you know, yeah, again, ARGN and Unfiction are the best places to go to kind of keep abreast of things and kind of get a feel for what's going on.
Okay, I've got a couple links, and those will all be on our website so people can find out more about your company and where to find out more about these games.
And just, you know, stay tuned. We got such cool things in store. I wish I could tell you. I mean, it's just
fantastic.
Wasps.
I love wasps. All right. Well, thank you
very
much.
I'm getting so much trouble.
Thank you, Elliot, for bringing your dad here.
Thanks for asking me. This is a lot.
Hey, no problem. Excellent.
Wunderbar.
Excellent.
I love that.
Great interview. I'd love new geek avenues to explore.
Absolutely. And that's the wonderful thing about geeks is that we're always opening up whole new avenues. But I think we've had a couple interviews in a row. We're going to do a couple traditional geek classic episodes through the month of December as we wind our way towards December. So if you have any specific topics that you'd like to hear from us, write us in. Never be shy. Let us know what's on your mind. So we'll talk about what's on your mind.
And our next one is going to be about geek shopping and presents for this year. And I would like it to be an episode that you could give to a family member.
And say, please listen.
Yeah, listen to this, please. So
we would love to have your suggestions on websites, on items, on comics, on books, on CDs.
I'm not a big comic book person, especially new comics that people should
get into. I'm trying to get into them right now.
I'm also going
out and buying them actively, but I think I'm still a little bit behind the curve.
So I'll set up a specific thread about geek gift suggestions, especially little stocking stuffer things, too. Like cool, weird, interesting thing.
And as we get closer to Christmas, maybe we'll do something like geek Christmas movies, that sort of thing, and get into that.
Is there like one
Scrooge
movie
other than
Scrooge?
Scrooge doesn't count.
All right, but we do have some mail, right?
And we have some links.
And some links.
Mail and some links.
Matt, the mailbag.
Yeah, we got a bunch of links. Hi, guys. I just found your show a few weeks ago, and I really liked it. I was just wondering, is the Demon Lord also a ninja? Thanks, and I look forward to
Does
the
he
next
sound
podcast.
Like a ninja?
The Demon Lord is not a ninja.
He is a pirate.
He is a pirate. Very definitely a pirate. Don?
Let's see. From Micah. I'm a recent subscriber to your podcast and have been enjoying it a lot, especially your latest episode, when you ventured into my special geek arena of games, and you highlighted Werewolf. Oh, a werewolf player.
See.
Truly, when I'm a vampire player, we don't always mix all that well. Truly one of the best games I think is out there right now. I completely geek out when it comes to Werewolf. Even when I'm not party setting with a group of willing players, I find myself thinking about Werewolf whenever I'm in a situation where many people are gathered. Being a teacher, I have more than once worked this game into my curriculum one way or another. My geekdom even goes so far that I even really enjoy designing board party games and, this might be the most fun part, packaging them up and making them look official. That's actually pretty cool. How do you do that? Write us and let us know. Werewolf is no exception. You can take a look at the complete set of rules I've gathered from multiple sources and from experience here. And he gives us a link. www.micahcarter.net/werewolf/instructions.html. And I've attached the complete set of game cards if you're interested. These are complete in that they contain a lot of various other rules that can be introduced to the game.
Cool.
Of course, there's what's so cool about this game is how easy it is to play. All you need are willing players and post-it notes. But making it look cool is fun in and of itself. I don't claim any artistic responsibility for the cards. Most of the images come from Dutch paintings or D&D books. Keep up the great podcasting, Micah.
Thanks, Micah.
So it's interesting. You should talk to him at some point because you have the same kind of passion about, oh, this game's kind of lame. But
I made my own vampire cards for Werewolf.
Did you?
I will post, yeah. Didn't I show it to you? It looks like, they're really cool looking. I showed you guys the vampire cards. I'll post them so people can
print. The one with the crosses and the guns.
Exactly. So cool. I'll post those on Geeks On at some point.
They're really cool.
Yeah.
You should also post the Star Trek
thing that you did.
Star Trek can get in trouble.
Oh, right. Okay. Aaron, hit it.
Don, I believe this is for you.
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh. Just for kicks. Not even a Republican. I'm a registered independent and lean Democratic.
Yay!
Though the far left answer-type wackos make me as ill as the far right Christians.
Well, fair enough.
But I sent $10 to the Republican Party online after I heard the co-host start with the send the money to Democratic Party mantra on the 10-4 show. That was by John. That was sent to us by John Strand. So
John.
That's
John,
what happens, Don.
Don, you did it to yourself.
John.
You start preaching and they're going to backlash.
Okay. Kathy writes, I have never considered myself a geek, although I may have geek tendencies. I started my career in software development, but now I'm in management.
Well, that's a tendency.
I never played video games, never owned an action figure, rarely watched the Sci-Fi Channel, actually live in San Diego, but never attended Comic-Con. In fact, I really don't remember why I downloaded Geeks On.
Wait a minute. This is the second email we've gotten from somebody who just...
It's the geek grenade.
But initially got attracted to the occasional political statements which coincided with my own opinions.
Don's making people Republican.
Here's where my conspiracy theory comes in. I have now listened to all your archive shows and eagerly await the latest episode. I find myself strangely drawn to the World of Warcraft community site. I started reviewing RPGs, wondering whether to join an online game. I am watching Battlestar Galactica and reading George R.R. Martin.
I bought the Blade Runner DVD.
I love you, Kathy.
I now believe that your podcast is a corrupting influence designed to recruit geeks to support your nefarious aims. Of course, since I am now a convert, just like a born-again Christian, I am completely devoted to those aims, whatever they may be. Way to go, guys. Please keep podcasting. I need my fix. Oh, and Matt, nice abs. I also checked out imdb.com.
Thank
Happy.
You. One try.
Naked on IMDb?
He is, actually.
I'm semi-naked on IMDb.
What the hell?
You're in, like, wet boxers.
What the hell is going on?
Men's Health or something like that. Years
is that the one your dad put up?
Yeah, no, like, he did. My dad was like, why don't you put these six pictures up? I'm like, Dad, what's wrong with you?
Like, don't get IMDb Pro and go and adjust my headshot.
I love him, but sometimes he does things.
Oh, God.
All right. But thanks for the apps comment.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Mom, for that email, by the way.
Right. Nice. Hi, guys. I've been listening for about 6 months and have been enjoying the podcast. I have to give you props. You're some of the only geeks that I know who actually have gotten jobs in the fields that most geeks would only dream about achieving. I have a question for you. My friends and I have been hanging out with each other since high school.
Does this guy think we work at strip clubs?
Yes, I don't know. As we've grown older, we don't get to role play as often as we once did. Yep, that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Now that some of us have wives, kids, jobs, and relocated farther away from each other. So the glory days of role playing from dusk till dawn, eating Hot Pockets and sucking down Jolt Cola to stay away have pretty much died out. We all would love to get together more often than we do, but a lot of the times it's not possible. We've been using Skype lately while playing WoW. It's got me thinking. We can do our role playing games using Skype or TeamSpeak, but my question to you is this. Do you guys know of any good programs that can stimulate as close to possible the gaming experience of us actually getting together around a table and playing a game like D&D, Vampire, or Rifts? Mm-hmm. In other words, a program that gives us tools to roll dice online mm-hmm. so that everyone sees what's rolled and the GM can keep track of characters, stats, and hit points.
Yeah, there are several of these.
Okay, something that is generic that any game can be incorporated would be nice, but if it's specific to a certain game type, that would be fine too. If we can use the program to talk and see each other, that would be nice. Otherwise, we'll continue to use Skype to do that part. Okay, hopefully you guys can help us out if you have heard of anything like that, but regardless, keep up the good work. Adam Aldridge, Pensacola, Florida.
I wish I had done the research, so you're going to have to go to our website, and I'll post the answer here, but I think RPG.net has links to a couple of them.
Yeah.
And one of them is a PC-only one, so you all have to be on PCs, and it gives you a map that you can place little counters on. You can pick like the type of character you want. You can even build, lay tiles down and move characters around. It has a chat section, but it has all the dice there. But you can also go to that board game one, vassalengine.com. Mm-hmm. And that you can make any board game or role-playing game tools and tailor it to you. And that is a...
That's fantastic.
And you can do that for Mac, PC, Linux, machine, or whatever.
You can even teach it to keep track of like hit points, keep track of anything you need to.
Is it easy to use?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Now, here's the thing. In my opinion, you should all get Skype, or if you all have iChat or something, a video one.
I think Ventrilo.
Video chat and do all that stuff, and then just use one of those programs just to roll the dice. I mean, you don't need to, be chat. You know, use the VoIP and all that stuff to do the majority of the work, and maybe just do the die rolling right on the fly. And don't use all the charts and all that stuff.
But that sounds like so much fun. Keep on gaming, man. That's awesome.
Do it.
Yeah.
Donnie?
Let's see. Geeks, I was wondering if any of you have ever played the Game of Thrones board game. I love the books, but I'm unsure of the game, not having much board game experience. I was wondering if it enhances or detracts from the books that I so love. Anyway, any feedback would be great. Thanks for having such a great show. I listen all the time. Think Geek? Josh. Think Geek.
Hey. Think Geek. Think Geek.
That's our new t-shirt.
That's our new t-shirt.
Thank you, Josh. Yes, in fact, just after our last interview with Garrett Wong, we sat down and we played the Game of Thrones board game.
I had a ton of fun.
We didn't play all the way through. Yeah. We just played enough to learn it because we were in a rush.
I thought I've been thinking about the game. I thought it was a great game, actually.
I enjoyed it. I haven't married myself to it yet.
Now, keep in mind, though, you do not like war games.
That's true. So, like, Risk doesn't do it for me.
Right. So this is Risk-ish.
Yes, it is. There's some other elements to it, but I hadn't... It is strong in the Risk department.
If this was much... Well, one of the things that I read in the rules after taking it home was that the game encourages a lot more interaction between players and a lot more betrayals and alliances between players. And we weren't doing that at all. We were each in our own agenda.
Yeah. For those of you who played games like Diplomacy or Civilization... Well, more Diplomacy. It kind of lies in that direction. Yeah. But what we did discover is that... It's well designed in the fact that you play different houses. You play House Baratheon, House Lannister, House Stark, House Greyjoy, all of these things. And as you play the game, the way the board is sort of designed in the beginning, it sort of encourages you to play in the direction of the original war.
Yeah.
I have never read any of those books. Mm-hmm. So the game to me was a clean slate, and I didn't feel like I was missing anything.
Good.
Right? Good. And I was playing the way I wanted to because I had no clue what my house was good at. So
I found it very interesting because like some of the houses, like the Lannisters, tend to be great with political stuff. I noticed when looking through their cards, the Tyrells are very rich and they have a lot of potential, but they're set up in such a way where House Tyrell, who doesn't really become involved until later in the second book, they don't really get that involved in the beginning of the game. They're sort of set off to the side. It takes them a little while to get there.
It's very smart.
You know, the Starks and the Baratheons are right in the middle of things.
I think
right
it's worth picking up.
I approve. Hopefully, one of our our wayward children will return to us. Maral, if you're still out there, let us know you're okay.
Yeah.
She won our copy of the Game of Thrones board game when we had our competition.
She's busy playing.
So there you go. Yeah, we haven't heard from her since she got the board game, so that must be it.
There you go. Peter.
Dear geeks, I'm happy to say that because of your program, I am no longer lonely. I have my share of friends, however none, that's right, zero of them enjoy talking about geek material.
Oh.
I've adapted and watched sports and go to an occasional party, but my heart truly lies in Westeros and Hyrule.
Oh, see?
I came across your site while searching for George R. R. Martin interviews. I'm one of the biggest Ice and Fire fans, but have no one to share or discuss it with.
Well, you would have loved the answer to our last question.
Once I heard that show, I was hooked and have made it about halfway through your programs. They are entertaining and enlightening. Turn the page. I'm always telling my wife, a non-geek, about your show, and she doesn't get it. My wife is
what?
The same
Dumper.
Way, by the way.
Dumper.
And my wife doesn't get it either.
Yeah. Nor does Matt's fiance.
Yeah.
I'm so alone.
We're going to get Donna dates soon.
I listen to your shows at work. I run AutoCAD for an energy company, and it makes the time fly. Thank you so much for your shows, and I can't wait to hear more. Josh, P.S. I would love to hear more about A Song of Ice and Fire. There are so many characters that there would be endless versus matches. Think about it. Tywin Lannister versus a dragon.
Okay, Tywin Lannister versus a dragon would go like this.
Hi, I'm Tywin Lannister.
That depends. Does Tywin Lannister get his armies?
It would still go like this.
No. I don't think it depends on the dragon. It depends on how big the dragon is. Tywin Lannister is probably one of the few people that could probably face a dragon and figure out a way to kill the fucker.
Maybe.
We should do I mean, you guys have read all the books. We should do an all about.
All about Ice and Fire?
Yeah, I mean, right. There's so much to discuss. I mean, the damn books are...
So come into the new year.
We've
got a full slate this month. So,
you want to close with the biggie?
All right, folks. We have... first off, let me just say...
Damn show's already 2 hours long. No, but this is a great...
Dan, thank you for writing us this lengthy letter. Those of you who are listening still, settle in. Settle down.
Don's telling a story.
Get ready for a nice read. All right? I'm not going to speed through this one like I did the last one. I have met my last few girlfriends in online MMORPGs. Now, before I go into further details, let it be known that I am a Brit living in the U.S. Oh, he's a Brit. Okay.
Okay.
I was first introduced to the world of MMOs by a little game called EverQuest.
We apologize to all the Brits.
I apologize for nothing. I had only been in the States for a short time, and everyone used to dial up. I won't talk about cyber much, only that I was trained in its application by my first online girlfriend.
Boy.
She was a homebound wife in a failing real relationship and had experience in the online courting arena. She took me to a zone in the game called Lake Wrath, where there is a secluded tower. We climbed to the top, where I was instructed in virtual birds and bees.
Oh, God.
And since then, I've had about 6 MMO partners, 3 of which were women. No, I'm kidding. And have met 3 in real life. A complication, a moment of pure red-faced embarrassment arose just after I met Kate in real life. I'd been a longtime partner in game only of a girl called Rachel. I couldn't get my mind off her. We had exchanged pictures, even videos of each other, but we had never met or spoke on the phone. It was to remain virtual. Her parents demanded that. I did have the opportunity to meet up
she
with Kate,
eight.
Though. She was a very sweet toddler, a kind girl. I had spoken on the phone with a few times. She loved to hear me pronounce certain words within my then quite heavy British accent, such as bum or cor blimey.
Yes. Oh, the lift. Or aluminium.
Sick trick.
Schedule.
Kate and I did meet up, both in NYC and in her hometown in the Midwest. We met a few times and had a fun time together, and she was as sweet in person as she was online. However, I still had my hang-up over Rachel and couldn't get past it. Rachel and I were still a couple in-game. On this Ooh. One fateful night, only a day or so after a visit from Kate, I was alone with Rachel online. Sigh. Yes, that kind of alone. Kate did know about how I felt for Rachel, but it was not until the following happened that it really became clear.
Wait, is Kate also online? Or is she real? Is she close by?
Kate's real.
They're both online.
Oh, they're both online? I thought Kate was real and close by.
She's real and online.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Let me explain one little game mechanic. In-game chat in EQ, EverQuest...
Oh, no.
...can be sent... In-EQ can be sent to various channels, such as group chat with the slash G...
No, he did not.
...say with slash S, or guild with slash GU. Kate, Rachel, and myself, and a bunch of Kate's real-life friends were all in the same guild.
On game.
See where this is going at? So, slash Rachel and G. I were alone on a poorly textured, pixelated beach, typing heatedly in group chat. Whoa. Without warning, I have a brain fart and create a long sentence or two or explicit material intended to advance our carousal. What I hadn't noticed until I hit enter was that the words were preceded by slash GU rather than slash G.
Oh, no!
Kate was, of course, online at the time, as well as a lot of others. Rachel disconnected, but the damage was done. I felt terrible, and rightly so. Kate forgave me later on, and we are friends to this day. She is now meeting...
Friends.
...seeing a local chap, and they are very happy. She's a great lass. Rachel would... you can't say the word lass without lapsing into a British accent.
Yeah, well...
How about lass?
No.
How about it, lass?
Lassie, come home.
All right.
Rachel would not have much to do with me for a long time. She swore off that kind of online activity. Later on in EQ
you
development...
you publicly humiliated her.
More salt, Matt?
Yeah.
Later on in EQ development and in WoW, concept of a default channel other than say would have been created. I doubt it was to unburden the activity... let's rewind. I'm going to start that paragraph over again. Later on in HQ development and in WoW, the concept of a default channel other than say would be created. I doubt it was to unburden the actively horny minds of socially repressed adults, but what's good for the goose is good for the gander, if you will. I am currently in the best relationship of my life with a fantastic girl I met in the Blackwing Lair dungeon of WoW.
Oh, no!
You know, that's just such a romantic spot. You can go back there for your anniversary. I do have plenty of stories to tell about her and myself.
Same time next season.
But none in the same classification of the story above, for which I'm sure she is thankful. Oh, and she lives 2,000 miles away. It's a shining new, spectacularly lit, anti-aliased HDR world, isn't it? All the best. Great show, Dan. P.S. The names have been changed to protect the, innocent doesn't work, does it? Well, they've been changed. Dan.
Dan, thank you for bearing your soul.
Yeah, and putting yourself through Matt's, you know.
I'm slightly mean.
For all of you who write in, and Dan understands this, I'm sure, we make fun of you, but we make fun of you with love, because we've all been there.
Much love.
Now, we have one more real quick one.
I haven't been to that dungeon, and now I'm not worried about going.
All right, Peter.
Yeah, what's this on the floor?
Aldoth writes... Hi, geeks. I was just listening to your show on online dating and wanted to send a picture of me and my amazing girlfriend, Rachel. We met on RSVP.com and had our first date on the 23rd of November last year, and things have been going really well. She and I have been living together since April. One of the reasons that online dating worked well for me was that I have a son from my previous relationship. He lives with his mom, and it was a hard thing to bring up. This is really never a good time. There's really never a good time. If you say it too soon, it freaks girls out. And if you keep it to yourself for too long, it can seem like you were hiding something. With RSVP, I just put the facts up, about myself on my profile, and that way if someone was interested in me, they would accept me for who I am.
Wow. This sounds like settleforsteve.com. Remember that?
What?
The guy put up a website that says, I'm just going to tell you all the things that are wrong with me. And if you're still interested, here's my email address.
Wow.
It's called Settle. I think it was settleforsteve.com.
That's hilarious. I've never heard of that.
I love it. And he has his pros and like pros and cons. And one pro was like, I own my own tux.
Rachel hasn't met my son yet. He's 2 on the 3rd of November. So if you could wish him a happy birthday on an early November show, that would be cool.
Oops,
we sort of missed that, but we do wish him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
It took us a while to get to our mail. I will try to play it for him. So let's do that again. Let's say, everybody, happy birthday, Jack. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Happy birthday, Jack!
Okay.
Or you can save it for next year and be a cool dad then.
Or hold on, hold on, hold on. Merry Christmas, Jack!
Merry Christmas, Jack!
All right. And the happy Hanukkah.
He lives in Tasmania.
Yeah, this Jewish guy.
Happy Purim?
Dad?
Happy Kwanzaa.
Exactly.
He lives in Tasmania, and I live in Victoria, so I have taken a plane trip to see him, but we are looking at setting something up next year. Anyway, just wanted to share my experiences with you guys and love the show. And this is a picture of them.
They look pretty cute.
Well
great,
done.
She's hot.
Great radio. Great radio, Peter. Great radio.
Well done. So,
anyway.
Alrighty.
Yet another
two hours
of your life wasted.
I have two links.
All right, Peter.
Yet another two hours.
Make
and
it three.
Some.
Make it 3 hours. We don't worry, Peter.
So a great board game that we've played, Ticket to Ride. Mm-hmm. You can go online and play it at ticket2ride.com, mm-hmm. and you can play it for free. It's a great game. Everybody should check it out. Also, I'm going to put on our links this game Flow, which is so interesting. It's a I'm not even going to describe it. Just check it out. It's really a lot of fun and
great.
Just kind of cool with a very simple design. So you can go to our website at www.geekson.com, and we have lots of great links there to lots of things if you haven't checked it out. Comics, web comics.
Yes. Peter, can you email us? Oh, go ahead.
We tend to leave our links up from past episodes, so it's really getting to the point where it's sort of a little treasure trove of fun geek stuff.
Absolutely.
And Peter, can you email us from the website?
You can email us from the site or just by typing in any of our names at geeksOn.com.
That's Matt.
Don, Peter, Aaron.
And Aaron or geeks at geeksOn.com.
And there you go.
And don't forget, we are still hosting our promo competition. It's not a competition. Our promo enthusiasm.
This is us begging you to help us come up with promos.
Please, God.
We've got a few really good ones that have come in, and thank you very much. And we are still, we have not declared a winner yet. So if you have any ideas for a 15 to 20 second promo, let us know.
Send it in.
Yep.
Think geek.
Read it on the air. And we actually now have a prize for the person whose promo we use. We're going to be recording our own and one person's that we select. We have a copy of Species 3 starring the legendary Mac Yang.
Done! Jeez!
Which he will autograph.
Where's the prize, though?
Oh, what is wrong with you?
Which he will autograph and send off.
Oh, my God. You're Satan.
Wait a minute. A free copy?
A free copy of Species 3.
Whoa!
I thought you'd have to pay.
I don't think anyone's ever had to pay for Species 3.
I think they had to pay people to take Species 3.
Hell in a handbag. You can watch Matt get a tentacle through the face at the very first
moment. Oh, God.
Now, for those
don't
of you who are interested in seeing Matt in Species 3.
I'm so bad. Don't watch it.
You can currently purchase it off of Netflix
don't
for something
go.
Like $6.
No.
I think it's five or $6.
I'm bad. It's no.
Oh, God.
All right. So anyway.
All right, so let's wrap this damn thing up.
You've wasted another 2 hours of your life with the geeks.
Excellent.
And we'll get on another episode sooner so you can buy your Christmas gifts early.
That's right.
Yep. Or Hanukkah gifts. Or holiday gifts. Or
Kwanzaa.
Whatever. All right.
Jedi.
Your December
Jedi
presents.
Jedi Day
gifts.
No, what is it called? It's called...
It's
what are the Wookiees? Wookiees holiday season. I forgot. It ain't Life Day. Something like that. Anyway, alright. Bye, everybody.
Happy Life Day.
Have a great Geek Week.
Geek it out.